You ready? Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the January 22nd council meeting. I'd like to let the record know that all council members are present, and we'd like to take a moment of silence, please. Thank you, and we'll start with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, George, for the pledge. Under mayor and council member announcements and presentations, I just asked to pull a couple of consent items off the consent calendar, A5 and A6. One's a proclamation and one's a presentation from NEP. If I could get consensus to do that. That'd be okay, George? Okay, with that, I'd like to pull A5. And A5 is a proclamation supporting the Start by Believing public awareness campaign. And I'll step down to the podium and ask Jane Pomeroy to join me there for the proclamation. So thank you for joining me. I'll read the proclamation verbatim, and then Jane, you can give us a few words. Thank you. This proclamation is from the City of Morro Bay, supporting the Start by Believing public awareness campaign. The City Council, City of Morro Bay, California, whereas the City of Morro Bay shares a critical concern for victims of sexual violence and desire to support their needs for justice and healing. And whereas in 2011, the Morro Bay Police Department received a total of 4 reports of rape or attempted rape, and the Sexual Assault Recovery and Prevention Center served the needs of county victims during 422 crisis interventions, 219 peer counseling sessions, and 107 forensic exams, law enforcement interviews, or other proceedings. And whereas research estimates that as many as 1 in 6 women and 1 in 33 men will become the victims of rape or attempted rape, yet most will not report the crime, law enforcement, and rapists who are not deterred by authorities will perpetuate an average of 6 crimes. And whereas the Start by Believing awareness campaign is designed to improve responses of friends, family members, and community professionals, so they can help victims to access supportive resources and engage the criminal justice system. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the City Council of the City of Morro Bay hereby proclaims that the Start by Believing public awareness campaign be launched in the county on February 1st, 2013, and do hereby declare this day to Start by Believing Day throughout the City of Morro Bay, California. Jane, this is what we have to present to you, and we'd love to hear a few words from you. Thank you for joining us. Thanks.
Thank you for having me. My name is Jane Pomeroy, and I'm the Crisis Services Specialist at the Sexual Assault Recovery and Prevention Center, or also known as the SARP Center. Thank you to Mayor Jamie Irons and the Morro Bay City Council for recognizing the devastating impact of sexual violence in our community. By proclaiming February 1st, 2013, Start by Believing Day in the City of Morro Bay, we join with other neighboring cities as well as the County Board of Supervisors in launching a public awareness campaign designed to improve our response to sexual assault. The campaign is called Start by Believing because a friend or family member is typically the first person a victim confides in after an assault, and each person's reaction is the first step in a long path toward justice and healing. Knowing how to respond is critical. A negative response can worsen the trauma and foster an environment where sexual assault predators face zero consequences for their crimes. Research documents that rapists attack an average of 6 times, which means that 1 failed response can equal 5 more victims. Start by believing will lead the way towards stopping this cycle by creating a positive community response, informing the public, uniting allies and supporters, and improving our personal reactions. The goal is to change our community and outcomes for victims 1 response at a time. When the Start By Believing campaign has been launched in other communities, it has resulted in an increase in reported sexual assaults and survivors seeking services. The Sexual Assault Recovery and Prevention Center, which recently merged with the North County Women's Shelter and Resource Center, is prepared to respond to survivors in our community. This newly merged organization serves both victims of domestic violence and sexual assault, as well as their loved ones. Both agencies have served the community for more than 30 years, with services including a 24-hour crisis line, prevention education, restraining order assistance, 2 safe houses, and counseling services. The campaign will officially launch on February 1st with the help of numerous criminal justice and community partners. Our goal is to reach every adult resident of the county with campaign materials, including posters and brochures, postcards and bookmarks, t-shirts and car magnets. We've even rented a roadside billboard to display the message of Start By Believing. Please visit us on our website or on Facebook, or come by one of our offices in San Luis Obispo or Paso Robles to obtain materials. We hope you'll join us in this effort to end sexual violence in our community and Start By Believing. And just really quickly, if anybody is interested in spreading the word, we have brochures. I have a lot of them. And also, we have some signs if you're interested in posting your photo on Facebook, making a pledge that you will start by believing with somebody discloses to you. We have little signs that say, my name is, and when somebody tells me they've been sexually assaulted or raped, I start by believing. And I can take your photo and email it to you if you want.
Thank you very much. You can place some of the brochures out on the table there.
Sure.
Thank you for bringing your message to us and sharing all that. Thank you.
Thank you.
With that, we have a presentation from the NAP. Are we here? Here we go. Thank you.
Good evening, Mayor Irons, City Council members. Thank you for allowing me to come and speak with you today. We've been partners with the city for many years, but I know there's a couple of new faces on the council, so I wanted to take the opportunity to come and speak with you.
Thank you. Can you give us your name, please,
for
the record? Thanks.
Adrienne Harris, Executive Director of the One Open National Estuary Program. And I also wanted to say thank you. I know at your last council meeting you took an action to assign a new alternate to our executive committee, which is the policy committee guiding our work. The city has a seat on that committee. Noah Smuckler is the person sitting there. And George, you're now our new alternate, so I'm very excited to hear that. Thank you very much. I hope you knew that. So the Morro Bay National Estuary Program is here because of local support of the community surrounding the bay. I am a relatively recent resident to the area, and I was so taken when I moved here with so much support and love that the community has for Morro Bay. And since the 70s, you know, people have gathered together to try and protect this beautiful place that we all live in. And because of the efforts of the community, in 1995, we convinced the Environmental Protection Agency to designate Morro Bay as an estuary of national significance, and the Morro Bay National Estuary Program was born. We're actually a non-regulatory, not-for-profit organization. Some people think we're a government agency, and we're not. But that gives us the ability to do things that government agencies can't, and that's partnering with local landowners on a variety of interesting projects. But we are part of this national network of 28 national estuary programs around the country, and it gives us the opportunity to tap into federal resources to bring them here to the local level to help with concerns that we have. So we're recognized by the Environmental Protection Agency. We get funding from them and technical support from them, but we are a local organization about local solutions for local problems. and we bring citizens, government, nonprofits, and landowners together to protect and restore the bay. So there's three main things that we do as an organization. One, we're conducting monitoring and research so we can understand the health of the bay and the area surrounding it. We restore natural habitats because we want to protect the environment and keep it beautiful for all of us who are living here. And we educate residents and visitors on how to keep the bay healthy and what things you can do every day to help protect the bay. So why do my staff and I get up every day and go to work? Well, we feel that a clean and healthy bay means a vibrant local economy, healthy residents, and the ability to preserve our community's natural environment for generations to come. You know, the oyster farmers in the bay, their livelihood depends on how clean the bay is. You know, the kayak group businesses. There's a lot of our economy that is tied to the place that we live in, not to mention a lot of us live here because of how beautiful it is. So I just wanted to mention a couple activities that we do that maybe you've heard of that are associated with us. We have a very active volunteer monitoring program. We have had over 13,000 hours of volunteer time donated to our organization since the program started. Local residents in Morro Bay, Los Osos, and elsewhere are out in the creeks every month taking water samples so we can understand how the situation is in the bay. The MutMits program that you see around the community, we actually have 20 dispensers in Morro Bay alone, is actually a partnership with the estuary program, and the city has helped out quite a bit, and there's a number of local volunteers that help stock that and help raise funds to keep our pet waste out of the bay. We also do a number of restoration and conservation activities, both in the bay and then around the bay as well, because what we do around the bay impacts the bay. Some photos here you see on the left are the California Conservation Corps working on a project with us at Cal Poly, doing a water conservation project. We put in large rainwater harvesting tanks there to help collect water for the facility. And on the right, our local volunteers helping us on an eelgrass replanting. We, in September, did a test replanting of eelgrass in the bay. We've been concerned about how that habitat has been declining, and so we're out working to see if we can make a difference in that area. We, in the past, have done a lot to conserve land in the area, our surrounding areas, as well as work with landowners to fence out cattle from their streams and a number of other activities. I just wanted to show you the picture of the watershed itself. So we don't just do work in the bay. We do work in what we call the watershed, which is the area that drains into the bay. So again, what we do on land impacts the bay. And so this is a map of our estuaries, our watershed. It's 48,000 acres. It actually doesn't all go all the way to San Luis Obispo. If you're driving on Highway 1 or Los Osos Valley Road, look for the signs that we've posted there that demarcate the edge of the watershed. And then I wanted to just highlight a couple of the partnerships that we've had throughout the years with the city, in particular, since I'm here talking to the city council. We helped fund the storm drain atlas that the city did. We've also worked on some non-point and stormwater education with the city to help educate residents about the importance of stormwater management. We've helped fund oil spill response supplies for the Harbor Department so they are able to more quickly react to oil spills in the bay. We also have had a very successful partnership with the Harbor Department on helping remove derelict vessels from the bay. We've actually spent We were just talking, Eric and I, we think about $80,000 throughout the years on removing vessels, which is a problem here in Morro Bay since we don't have a good vessel haul out. So it gets kind of expensive to get rid of those big boats. We're also working on boater education with the city and many more things we hope to come. We have a management plan that kind of dictates the work that we do. We're actually just finalizing updating that plan. Noah's been very involved in review of that. And so I wanted to highlight a couple of items that are in the management plan that you might be of interest to you. Land protection, obviously, again, that's something that we work quite a bit on. Harbor and boating best management practices. We've done a lot of work with the city throughout the years and can hope to continue that work. Freshwater resources and water conservation practices is a big focus area in our management plan. Stormwater best management practices, controlling what's running off into the bay. protecting important habitats like eelgrass that I mentioned earlier, and education and outreach to visitors and residents alike. And since there are residents in the audience and at home, I wanted to take just a couple seconds to talk about what we can do every day to keep the bay clean. So one, I encourage everyone to take the Clean Water Pledge that's on our website, pledging four simple things that you can do every day to help keep the bay clean. And if you wanted to go the extra mile, you should stop by our office or go to our website as well to pick up the Bayside Living Guide. It's a guide that we helped publish that gives you great helpful tips of things that you can do at home to help keep the bay clean. So things that you can do are pick up after your pet when you're walking them down the street. It helps keep that waste out of the bay when it rains. Watch what you put down the drain, not only on the storm drains in the street, but your drains in your sink at your house. Household chemicals and pharmaceuticals that go down the drain aren't always cleaned up through the sewer wastewater treatment process. Turn off your tap. We live in an area where it's pretty arid in the summer. It doesn't rain that much. You know, water conservation is something that we can do every day with just, you know, turning the water off while you're brushing your teeth. Keep trash in the can. Marine debris is a problem for creatures that are living in the ocean and, you know, want to make sure we keep garbage out. And having a bay-friendly yard, I mentioned the Bayside Living Guide that we have. It's got lots of tips on how to keep your yard bay-friendly. So I've talked to you enough. I just wanted the opportunity to come and say hello and give you a short spiel about us. And, if you have any questions about us, please contact us. You can also ask Noah. He knows quite a bit about the ESTRI program from sitting on the executive committee. And, again, please come out and volunteer, donate, or join our conversations on Facebook. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Adrian. Are there any questions?
No.
Okay. Thank you, Adrian. Thanks for all your comments. Now we come back to council announcements, and we'll start Councilman League. Do you have any announcements from Councilman Christine Johnson?
Thank you, Mayor Irons. I would just start with a thank you to the city for my attendance at the League of California Cities New Mayors and Council Members Academy that took place last week in Sacramento. Mayor Irons and City Manager Luker attended with me, and we also had a chance on Friday to do a mandated ethics training as well, so hopefully that will help. But I really appreciated the opportunity to go. We were able to interact with over 440 other new mayors and city council members all through the state of California, and it was their first ever sold out academy. So I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but there were certainly lots of networking opportunities and people we've met, so thanks for that. The city manager has the binder that we received, and she's willing to share it with all the council members who couldn't attend, but also anyone who's a member of the public could come and check that out. It's really interesting to see the level of training that we did receive, and it's also wonderful to know there is a League of California Cities organization that is working on behalf of our cities. So thank you for that. And then I have two library announcements. February 2nd is the upcoming library book sale that the Friends of the Morro Bay Library are putting on at the community center. It's one of their four large book sales of the year, and please come out and support the sale. Members can shop between 9 a.m. and 10 a.m., but you can always join at the door, and then the sale goes until 2. So please check the website at mbfol.org. And then for many of you, you might already know this is happening, but there is a Cuesta Book of the Year that they do every year. Cuesta College organizes it. This year, the title is The Language of Flowers by Vanessa Diffenbaugh, and it's a wonderful community reading event, and it culminates on, February 27th at Cuesta College. And the event is where you read the book in advance, hopefully, and then you get to hear from the author. And the event is free, and it starts at 5 o'clock and goes until 7 at Cuesta College, and that's February 27. So check the county library website for more info. And also in Morro Bay, there are many activities that center around this Cuesta College Book of the Year, and there are two events coming up, Saturday, January 26, and this one is The Role of Flowers in the Community Garden, because the book is called The Language of Flowers, and that's presented by Joanna Varland, who is active in our community garden, and then on Saturday, February 2nd, 11 to noon, at the library, The Language of Flowers and Plants, presented by Adam Haig and Katie Finley. So there's more information about those at the library, so I encourage you to come and be a part of the Book of the Year. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilwoman Nancy Johnson, do you have any announcements? Thanks. Councilman Smuckler?
Yes, thank you. I just had three announcements. One is really generally to thank the Winter Bird Festival folks for doing what I felt was the most energetic and well-organized bird festival that I've witnessed. I was able to attend the mixer and bump into a number of parties out birding, and everyone was just having a really great time. I felt like the community center was organized in a way that brought people in, and overall it was really good to see, and I'm looking forward to them putting on another great bird fest next year. The Chamber of Commerce is putting on an event called the Job Seekers Academy, and this is organized to help anyone who's interested in finding a job, whether they need to simply update their resume, learn how to network better, develop a targeted resume for a specific job field, learn about new emerging industries, or generally just get some training on when you're taking an interview, how to approach that interview and actually be there and be prepared. And the Chamber's intent is really to offer this event. It's free, and invite anyone, any age, to attend. And it's going to be January 29th, Tuesday, from 8:30 to 4:30 at the Vets Hall. And again, it's free, but you need to register in advance by the 25th. So if you are interested in this event, the Job Seekers Academy, please call Dulce at 903-1400. And my last announcement is regarding an event that Mayor Irons, myself, and a number of others in the community have been working on for a while now with the Estero Bay Alliance for Care, which is a network that's come together to essentially try to support each other. There are different organizations out there that try to help people in need, whether it's a family that's just missed a rent or needs some help with children's activities and getting them the things that they need to be able to go to school, all the way to someone that's homeless and looking to recover and get back onto a living situation that's more productive. And these different groups have come together with this alliance, and we decided that one of the things that we needed to do was raise more awareness in the community and provide a forum for this discussion to take place and for the resources that are existing on the North Coast, the Estero Bay, Los Osos, Morro Bay, and Cayucas, to really present what they offer. So this event, which is coming up actually the January 27th, that's this Sunday from 3 to 5 o'clock at the Morro Bay Community Center, is aimed at not only someone that is looking for help, would like to find a way to either help themselves or someone that they know, or someone that would like to get involved with one of these organizations and offer a hand. And one of the features of the event is going to show a documentary called Homeless Not Hopeless, which was filmed in San Luis Obispo, and we'll actually have the documentary producer there at the event. She's going to introduce the documentary, and we're going to have a bit of a roundtable open house with all the different organizations that are involved with our alliance. So again, that event, which I hope anyone will come out that sounds interested in this, is January 27th, 3 to 5, at the Morro Bay Community Center, so that's this Sunday. And the title is Compassion in Action, and you may see some posters around. If you'd like some more information, you can give me a call at 772-7668.
Thank you. I have a couple announcements as well. I would like to echo my thanks as well. The conference that we went to in Sacramento was well attended, very informative, and very, very grateful for that experience. So the other announcement I have is, let's see, it is the 25th of January, excuse me, this Super Bowl Sunday will be held. It's an event by Central Coast Concerned Mountain Bikers. It's the 25th the 25th anniversary. So basically started 25 years ago with a group of people that wanted to do trail maintenance out at Montanadero. Here it is 25 years later. It's a really well-organized organization. We're upwards around 150 to 180 people that show up and do trail work out at MDO, and it's a great event. I would hope and encourage you guys to come out for that on Sunday. It starts at the 8 o'clock at the Spinner's Cove there on Super Bowl Sunday. The other one other announcement, so I had my first Slow Cog meeting, and I think I'll just highlight one of the events that went on there. There was a big turnout for all of our bikers in the community to discuss the paving up on Highway 1 north of Cambria, and I think there was a really good turnout from our biking community, and I think Caltrans responded, and hopefully we'll see some corrections on that paving section of the road for anyone who's experienced that. And with that, I think that is our done with our announcements, and turn it over to closed session report. Rob.
Good evening. Prior to tonight's meeting, council went in closed session to discuss real property negotiations. The property discussed was the property on Main and Harbor Boulevard, the Cloisters development, and also the Morro Bay Marina. As to all three of these items, no action was taken that requires reporting under the Brown Act.
Thank you. And now we open up for a public comment. Please state your name. You have 3 minutes. It's one of the most important parts of our meeting, getting to hear you. So please come up.
Good evening, Mayor, Council. My name is Robert Davis. I live in Morro Bay, and I chair the Morro Bay Citizens Bike Committee. San Luis Obispo Council of Governments has called for a list of bikeway and pedestrian improvement requests to be presented February 6th. The Citizens Bike Committee has compiled a list of 14 requests. I think you all have a copy of that letter. Last year, our number one request was for a bike and pedestrian plan for the city, and now we have one. That was our number one request, and thanks to Public Services, we have produced that plan. And because we have an approved bike plan, we received two grants of funding this year. One funds the number one pedestrian project, which was a bridge across Morro Creek to connect the Embarcadero with North Morro Bay. We received a National Byways grant to get that started. And we also received a bicycle and transportation account grant to make improvements to the bikeway through the beach tract, which includes the number one bikeways project, a safe crossing of Atascadero Road near the high school. Most of this year's list that the bike committee produced includes requests from previous years. I would like to highlight a couple of those as high priority safety projects. One is that the new crosswalk that's going to be installed on Atascadero Road between the high school and the freeway, we recommend should include flashing lights in the pavement to help warn motorists when someone is using the crosswalk. The other is that we would recommend removing the metal bollards that are set in the Class 1 bike path between the Cloisters and Main Street. There are 8 or 9 fixed metal bollards that are right in the middle of the bike lane. We would prefer that something more flexible and more forgiving of collisions would be used in those areas. In closing, the council has been very supportive of bicycle and pedestrian improvements in the past. We thank you for that, and we look forward to a productive future. Thank you.
Thank you.
Susan Heineman, resident of Morro Bay, Mayor Irons, City Council members, staff, citizens of Morro Bay. During my recent walks in Morro Bay, I could not help but notice the growing amount of Jesus vandalism that is appearing in our city. I've seen it on the boardwalk to the Rock, in the cloisters, and in the organic garden near Del Mar Park. It can be found on fences, garbage cans, memorial benches, garden banisters, newspaper racks, etc. It's hard to miss big black block letters spelling out the name Jesus, J-E-S-U-S. I spoke to Police Chief Amy Christie this morning, and she stated that a crime cannot be defined as such unless the victim can be identified. This means that when the vandalism is identified, it has to be reported to the police, documented as evidence, and the person or business whose property has been identified has to be identified, and then the graffiti can be removed. If these steps aren't taken, there is no way to prosecute the person responsible for the vandalism. I would like to appeal to you, my fellow citizens, whether you are birding, walking, or sitting in the car, take a moment to look around to note any Jesus vandalism. Many people say, just leave it to the police. But their jobs focus on keeping us safe and helping people in distress, and normally does not include casually walking down the boardwalk or stopping by the community garden to visit with Noah's Smuggler's Chickens. As a final note, I would like Morro Bay to be noted for the beauty of the Rock, its incredible bird population, and friendly citizens, not for its graffiti. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening, Council. I'm John Fennessy. I'm president of the Friends of the Morro Bay Fire Department. I'm here with Keith Taylor, who is the past president, and my wife, Meredith Fennessy, who is the secretary. I'd like to thank the council as well as the citizens of Morro Bay for the very successful fire department dedication for the Harbor Street Station that we had in December. It was probably the best attended community function in Morro Bay history, and we just want to thank everybody for that. The Friends of the Morro Bay Fire Department raised over $15,000 in selling the bricks outside the fire department. Those funds go to help support the firefighters in their training to become paramedics, as well as their fire academy training. And so it doesn't pay for the full cost, but it does defer it, and it's very, very expensive. The other night at the Chamber of Commerce installation dinner, our past president, Keith Taylor, was also recognized as Citizen of the Year for Morro Bay. So Keith is here, and I'd like to say congratulations, Keith. He didn't know I was going to do that. Finally, the Morro Bay Rotary Club is having their annual fundraising event on February 9th at 5 p.m., and it is Evening with Heart at the Community Center. Tickets went on sale today. They're $25, and they are going to go fast. So we have very limited amounts of tickets, so if you haven't purchased yours, you can get them from Village Cleaners, from my office, Fennessy Law at 500 Morro Bay Boulevard, from Bayshore Realty, and also from Coast Electronics. So I encourage you to get those and let us know if you're going to come. And that's it. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Richard Sadowski, citizen of Morro Bay. I'm also a mechanical engineer by profession and a grade 4 wastewater collection system operator and a former employee at the Cayuga Sanitary District, where one of my accomplishments was I wrote the procedure that calibrates the flow meters at Lift Station 5 that determines how much sewage Cayuga Sanitary District is pumping to the wastewater treatment plant. About 5.5 years ago, I co-wrote a report called The Wastewater Treatment Joint Powers Agreement and Some of the Financial Impacts regarding the document. And basically, this the current JPA, Joint Powers Agreement, was written by a former Cayuga Sanitary District board member back in 1982 and has some serious issues and flaws. And in the report, some of them are pointed out. One of the things that we really need to do is rewrite and have a new JPA. In the recommendations, I'll read it out. Morro Bay should attempt to negotiate a new JPA with the previous necessities to protect the city's financial interest. The current JPA was negotiated during a planning of a new wastewater treatment plant. That was back in 1982. And on page 4 of the JPA, it stated, and I quote, "This is intended to be a joint owners agreement setting forth the respective rights of Morro Bay and Cayucas for the purpose of construction and expanded wastewater treatment plant, as well as for the ownership and operation and maintenance of the plant and the facilities." Basically, with the recent decision that the CCC had, which is denying the project where it's at moving, there's no question that it's a new project. We need a new JPA. And one of the things that I would highly recommend that the city do, since the Cayuga Sanitary is polarizing themselves, is require the Cayuga Sanitary District, since they have two gravity lines that enter the city limits, require them to get an NPDES permit for disposal of sewage and entering the city limits. And then that lift station 5 in Toro Creek, which is in the city limits as well, that, you know, that's where it's all collected. And I highly recommend this. This was presented to the public record. It should be available from your staff. Your staff has had it. And one of the things that was done was that the former mayor said that the attorney Schultz and some of the other board members were going to work on this, and they haven't for the 5 years. And I think that, in my opinion, Mr. Schultz, as well as Mr. Carmel, have a serious conflict of interest, so it's be ethics issues if they get involved. So maybe the city should hire an outside consultant in rewriting that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Most distinguished city council, good evening. Ken Vesterfeld, resident of Morro Bay. I'd like to talk about a couple items here. Not items, excuse me, but some upcoming events. On April the 20th, we are going to be having our third annual emergency vehicle car show, which will be starting at Morro Bay Boulevard and Main Street. And it's an open free event for anybody that wants to come. And we just hope that everybody will come and participate. We're looking for sponsors for that. So if anybody would like to step up to the plate, that we would help you with that. And then also, a couple weeks following that is our 17th annual Cruise and Morro Bay Car Show. And hope to have another 500 vehicles here, which brings in an awful lot of people into town and to help out with the businesses here. And then in August, we're going to have a return for the second time, a group called the Ford F-100 North-South Group. And again, they're expecting approximately 100 vehicles, so they really enjoyed their visit here last year and thanked the city an awful lot for their cooperation. And then just briefly on item D1, your impact fees, I know you'll be discussing that tonight. Hopefully you don't kill that yet. As you saw, that Pastor Robles has extended theirs for 6 months. And it's not just for the homeowner. It's for all the construction people that provide monies for the family, that may provide money for the groceries. It affects the grocery stores, the restaurants, and gas stations. So maybe take that in consideration. We're not out of the woods yet as far as construction taking off quite excessively. And then lastly, congratulations to one of our audience members here this week. Roger Ewing is having a birthday, I do believe. I think he's a little bit older than me, but I got white hair and he doesn't. I don't understand. Thank you very much, folks.
Thank you, Ken.
Good evening, Mayor, City Council, City staff, and audience. I'm Karen Moss, your new Director of Tourism. I'd like to take this opportunity to ask everyone to please save the date, our grand opening festivities of the Visitor's Center at 255 Morro Bay Boulevard will be February 7th from 4 to 7. We're open to the public. We've been open since January 2nd, 7 days a week, 9 to 5. Some of you I know have stopped in already, but please stop in and see us and meet our staff, and we look forward to seeing you on the 7th. Thank you.
Thank you, Karen. Mm-hmm.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor and council members. I'm Jim Pauly, and I live up on Nutmeg Avenue. I was watching TV the other evening, and I happened to hit the show, the Planning Channel, Morro Bay. And I became aware of the fact that in process was a proposal to build two big tanks on the Rigetti property, where we have the lease, just over the hill from Nutmeg Avenue. And this could have huge negative visual impacts. Something like that, in having discussions before with the county, is supposed to be not above the ridgeline. It's supposed to be below the ridgeline. The way it sounded, this is something that would be above the ridgeline. It would have a huge negative impact to the neighbors from Highway 1. People could see it, and also from Highway 41. So what I'd like to suggest is that there be a public hearing and notice be sent, make sure that people that live in the area are notified, so that have a public meeting and discuss it, because these tanks are big. I believe it was said that there's one tank is going to be bigger than two houses up there. And so the other thing is it's a monument. I mean, these things are probably going to be there for 50 years. I mean, we build beautiful fire stations. We do beautiful streets and all these things. But what about the water tanks? We seem to stick them anywhere, and they can be as ugly as they want to be. And I don't know. I guess it's strictly engineering that goes into these things, but we ought to look at the appearance and how we can do something to mitigate the size of these things and the ugly appearance. So I would appreciate if a meeting or a hearing could be set up. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening, Council. My name is Joan Solu. I'm a resident of Morro Bay. I'm also your Tourism Bureau President and TBID Chair, or something like that. It's a little confusing for everyone, but it is President and Chair. Michelle Hawk, as Vice Chair, wanted to be here with us tonight, but she couldn't speak due to one of her kids is ill. So I just want to let you know that the Tourism Bureau fully supports moving forward with the contracts that are on your agenda tonight. The board is in full 100% unanimous agreement. We feel confident that by focusing the tourism into that singular circle in Morro Bay, that we're going to be able to organically grow tourism even further. And when we talk about organic growth, we talk about growing it within the sphere and growing it within the ability of what Morro Bay can support. We have many empty businesses here, and though they need support to get some storefronts in, get some restaurants churning and turning, and that supports the rest of our economy. Additionally, you might remember that our figures came in this year as the record all-time high tourism TOT collection, over $2 million, and we have gained market share on everybody else. Recent STAR reports for the state of California came in, and Morro Bay gained on every city within our county. So we are, the rebranding and the focused effort has really helped to make strides, and we want to continue doing that, which is why we've hired Karen Moss as our executive director. We're having our grand opening, I think you heard, save the date, February 7th, and we look forward to seeing you all there. And I will be departing early at the break tonight also, because I have a child who's under the weather and the 15-year-old's in charge, so thank you.
Thank you.
All my kids are out of the house. I have a 21-year-old under the weather in Edinburgh, Scotland right now. So, Susan Stewart, I'm a citizen of Morro Bay, business owner, and this year president of the Chamber of Commerce. We have a new board, a few new members. I think really a good board this year, a lot of diversity, and I hope you look them up on the website and introduce yourselves. Just wanted to let you know we did have our installation dinner, and we're so pleased to name Keith Taylor Citizen of the Year. Wilmer Tognazzini was named our living treasure, and our business of the year was Central Coast Music. Ed and Sunshine Frawley, surprise to them, and I think very well deserved. Taking the chamber hat off, just wanted to briefly address item D1, the impact fees. I looked at all the paperwork that was on the website, a really complex issue. I know in talking with Nancy and in my own memories of previous council meetings, I think the original intent of that waiver was to kind of boost the downtown business district and North Morro Bay, North Main Street, just because those were areas that had been particularly hard hit in the economic crisis. So that might be something to consider. Rather than, say, eliminating the whole waiver at this point, maybe redirect it a little bit. I do think there could be some value in taking some more time to look at the pluses and minuses. Clearly, the city is losing some money by having those fees reduced. At the same time, are there jobs that are being gained by those kinds of construction development projects happening? Are there possibilities with more outreach to some of these business owners? I know my landlord at my business is an absentee. He lives in Monterey, I think. So there are people who may not have heard about this, and perhaps we could use our economic development program to do some outreach to some of these folks and get them involved to realize, you know, this is a good time to do some sort of beautification projects, improvement projects, some of these larger things that they may not think about doing unless they know that there's some benefit not only to the community but to their own pocketbook. So hope you think about that, and thank you.
Thank you, Susan.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. My name is Roger Ewing. I'm a Morro Bay resident. And first, thank you, Ken, for the shout-out to the recognition of the struggles I have with the aging process ongoing. I would like to address two items. D1, as you could probably imagine and remember, I'm opposed to a moratorium on the impact fees. It is through these fees that we help finance our infrastructure, and currently our infrastructure is in need of a lot of financing. I would recommend, rather than a blanket denial, put an end to it. But when a commercial project comes before you, at that time, look for the benefit to the community, the long-term benefit. And if there is one, then it may indeed warrant a reduction in the impact fees. But to give a blanket elimination is unfair to all the businesses and residents who've already paid their fair share. Also, I would like to make note of and to compliment staff on one of the most comprehensive, well-balanced, well-thought-out staff reports on any subject I've seen in a long time. It is truly a remarkable document. I think if you read it thoroughly, you'll come to the same conclusion that I have. Secondly, I'd like to address D5, your discussion on what to do with the wastewater treatment plant. California Coastal Commission has certainly made their opinion quite clear, and I would hope that those in opposition to moving would now join the rest of us, and together we could work in making what could be a very substantial and very unique and wastewater treatment plant, one that could be a model for others, one that will last more than 30 years. And I think in order to do it right, we need the whole community. So I look to your leadership to gather that sense of community. And let's do the right thing for Morro Bay in the long term. And as long as I have another moment, I'd like to address something I've been wanting to do for a long time, and that is, not to be redundant, to acknowledge the efforts and the actions of one of our fellow citizens, and that's Keith Taylor, who for years has come before you, oh dear, and sung the praises of our fire department and begged and borrowed for the support, and most successful. I say thank you to Keith, and as a private citizen, I applaud him.
Thank you, Roger, very much. And happy birthday.
Thank you.
Good evening. Barry Brannon, a citizen of Morro Bay, mayor, council. There have been comments tonight about infrastructure and also a comment about the water tank project up on Nutmeg. And I was at the Planning Commission meeting, and there were some facts there that were kind of new to me. One, that we have 1.3 acres of land that we're leasing from the Rigetti property for our existing water tank. And the plan was to take out the old riveted tank and put two new steel welded tanks, which is probably a good idea for fire safety. But when you pay $20,000 a year for 1.3 acres, that kind of adds up. And if you can do a situation, the opportunity may come to us that we may perhaps buy the Rigetti property for the wastewater treatment plant. You kind of get a twofer. The problem of building that storage tank up there was calculated there was 5,000 cubic yards of dirt that had to be moved for the existing design, and that was going to tear up the Nutmeg Street, which really didn't make a lot of sense. So there was an alternative plan of perhaps if we owned the property, if I owned the property and I wanted to put a tank up there, that dirt could sure easily be applied through the 240 acres of Rigetti property. Now, it's in the county. We're going to have to get county permits. We're going to have to say, Mother, may I, and all that. So they're more realistic. If we acquired it, it was part of the city, and we could probably solve a lot of water storage problems, perhaps own the property for the wastewater treatment plant, and perhaps the citizens that are going to live up on Nutmeg would be very supportive of this project, and I think it would be good for the city. So I'd like to, in your wastewater treatment discussion, I hope you bring that element in, because every month, every year, $20,000 goes a long way. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening, Mayor and City Council. Bill Martini, Morro Bay. And I wanted to speak tonight on the proposed abandonment on the property at Yerba Buena Highway 1. It came before the Planning Commission. This is city-owned property, Toro Lane, and there's approximately 15,000 square feet that the city owns where the pavement ends, going west towards the ocean. That's where the no-name creek flows out. And this is property that I don't believe should be abandoned. I think it could be better used. It could be a staging area. This is where the bike trail comes through. There's parking requirements in that area. And I would just speak against abandonment. The resolution was passed at the Planning Commission. I believe it's going to be coming before you. And so this is just kind of a heads up for the citizens and you that it's a very valuable piece of property. It overlooks the ocean. It's next to an oceanfront lot that's almost 16,000 square feet. And the abandonment would actually go to the property owner next door. It wouldn't be a separate legal lot. And as far as saving it, I just think it's something that the city should hang on to and use for public good and shouldn't be abandoned to the neighborhood or the neighbor. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any more for public comment tonight?
Good evening. Linda Merrill. Good evening, Mayor and Council members. We have heard from the Coastal Commission. So now I would like to see the alternative sites revisited. The city must then make a site selection and proceed with hiring an engineering firm which can further design of the wastewater treatment plant that will serve our needs. If we can't get partners to join us, we need to carry on alone. Please, also, could you all consider having the boards and commissions meet at least once a month? Many of us waited for PWAB to meet so that we could voice our concerns about the paving. And so when you are thinking of having new boards and commissions and you'll have new people, I hope that you'll consider having all of the boards meet at least once a month. Thank you all for your efforts. Good night.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments for public comment tonight? I'll bring it back to council for comments. Start it down on the right. Councilman Smuckler?
Yes, I would like to respond to Mr. Pauly's comments regarding the nutmeg tanks and the public hearing. And actually, I'd like to direct that response to Mr. Livick to give him an update or a chance to update the public about the return of that item and likely public hearing that will be included.
Yes, the item for the environmental review of the nutmeg tanks was heard at last week's Planning Commission and was continued to a date uncertain. The applicant, the city, and our consultants need to address access, the number of truck trips, noise, dust, visual issues that weren't fully fleshed out in the environmental review. That environmental document will be recirculated to the affected agencies, and the project will be re-noticed to the neighbors live within 300 feet, and also it gets noticed in the paper, posted on the city's website. And I'll put another plug out for Notify Me. If you're interested in Planning Commission issues or any city issues, sign up for Notify Me, and you get an email when those appear on the city's website. The project is outside the city limits, and our review of the project for permitting is limited to the environmental review. That's not to say that city as owner of the project doesn't have a say on how it looks and how it fits in the neighborhood. Did that answer questions?
Yes, and to be clear, do you anticipate this approximately when it might come back?
I would say at least 30 days because the item has to be recirculated to the state clearinghouse. So they're going to take 30 days for the different agencies to review once it's recirculated. So we're probably talking sometime in March is when it's coming back.
Okay, thank you.
Nancy, you have any comments? George, Christine?
Just a clarification about the issue on nutmeg. It will come back to the Planning Commission. Is that correct?
Correct. It'll come back to the Planning Commission. If the environmental document is approved, we will forward that on to the county, who is lead agency over the coastal permit and use permit for that property.
Okay. Thank you.
I think it'd be nice to put a shout out to Keith, as you've already been recognized. So well deserved, Keith, for Citizen of the Year. Also, question for Mr. Schultz on the Yerba Buena proposed abandonment. Can you comment on that? I'll take
Mr.
this.
Mr. Livick will comment.
Okay.
On that. We had an application from a property owner to abandon a portion of the right of way. Yerba Buena. It's gone through its first stage of an abandonment, which is Planning Commission needs to make the findings that the abandonment is consistent with the general plan. After that, it comes to City Council at least once and maybe twice. First is the resolution of intention to abandon. If the City Council does desire to abandon the property, you will adopt a resolution of intention to abandon. The second is a order of final abandonment. This is a kind of a unique piece, not to discuss the project, but it's one of our only fee title owned pieces of property. So the City Council will have to, if they do choose to abandon it, declare it a surplus property and offer that for sale.
Thank you. Then I have a couple others. I'll look to the city manager, Ms. Luker, on the board's meeting once a month. There's probably more history about that, if you can comment on that.
There is. Thank you. Good evening, Mayor and Council. A couple of years ago, the City Council, in their review of the boards and commissions, made the determination that several of the boards, didn't have the need to meet on a monthly basis. There just wasn't enough information. So I believe the two boards that were cut down to every other month were the PWAB and the Recreation and Parks Commission, and they alternate. So 1 month will be PWAB, 1 month will be Recreation and Parks. With the exception of Ms. Merrill's comments, I haven't heard a lot of other comments about the concern about that, but it's something certainly that we could bring back for a council discussion item if the council was so interested.
Okay, thank you for that. And then one more. I have another question to respond to the vandalism, so I would direct that to our chief if you have any comments on that. Thanks.
Good evening, Mayor, City Council. Actually, I did meet earlier today, and we've been investigating this vandalism since yesterday. We've had a couple of reporting parties, and we're actively investigating. We also did a media release at about 5:30 this evening. Great. Seeking participation by our community.
Great.
Thank you.
Thanks, Chief.
Actually, could I have a follow-up just on that very issue?
Sure.
Thank you. So, Chief Christie, in the case where it is on private property, not on public property, do you recommend that someone reports it and then they take the matter as far as cleaning into their own hands, or what is the process there?
I would recommend any time you have vandalism to any of your property that you report it, and then we can collect evidence. Either you can take photographs or we can before you clean it. Because once you clean it, basically you've erased our ability to grab the evidence and then have it prosecuted. Sure.
Okay, with that, how about if we take a short recess and we'll come back for the consent calendar? Thank you. Okay, is everybody ready to get started? Here we go. Okay, we're back, everybody. Thanks. We're back onto consent calendar. Does anybody have any items to pull on that?
A2.
Any else? Anything else?
I have to pull A1.
A1. Okay. We'll pull A1 and A2. Do we have a motion to approve items A3, A4, A5, and A6?
So moved.
I'll second that. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes. Back to discussion. A1, Christine?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I was able to work with the city clerk, and I just want to compliment her on the work she does trying to record people's names from just them speaking their names, and it's really difficult to get spelling correct. So my change is...
Yes, A2 I pulled because, as you'll see, at our last meeting we appointed the different representatives to our advisory boards and subcommittees and so on. And I was appointed, as I had been for the last couple of years, to the Chamber of Commerce Economic Development Committee. And following the meeting, we had brief discussion at the meeting about who would be the second appointments. And I feel very strongly about that committee. But following it, I thought more about Ms. Christine Johnson's strengths and connections countywide, as well as you also being the alternate for the EVC position. And knowing that I can still be active with the Economic Development Program and be involved there, working directly with the Chamber, I felt like it would be a stronger subcommittee with both of our Johnsons. So that's the explanation, and I support this and thank Christine for being willing to serve there.
Great. With that, we can have a motion to approve item A2.
Yes, I move to approve A2.
Second.
Do I second that? Okay. I'll let Ms. Nancy Johnson second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Councilman Smuckler, thanks for offering that up. And Christine Johnson for that as well. That takes us on to consent calendar is complete, and then move us on to the public hearings, item B1.
Thank you and good evening. Tonight you have before you Ordinance 852, which is the introduction and first reading to repeal and replace the Municipal Code sections 5.28 and 5.30 with a new section relating to video service providers. In 2003, the city had entered into a 10-year franchise agreement with Charter Communications to operate a cable television service within the community. That agreement sets to expire on April 1st of this year. And in the current franchise agreement that was negotiated between the city and Charter, there's some provisions in there relating to payments of a franchise fee of 5% of gross revenue, as well as a 1% fee on annual gross revenue for the public education and government access fees. In addition to providing the city with the institutional network and the provision of basic level of video service to all of the public buildings. Since that time, in 2006, the state enacted the Digital Infrastructure and Video Competition Act, or DIVCA, and that took effect in January of 2007. And what this act did was it took the franchising authority and changed the mechanism for how franchises are issued within the state, and took it from the cities and the counties, where the cable provider would need to go to each individual city and county within the state and negotiate a separate agreement, and resting that authority now with the state, specifically the Public Utilities Commission, or the PUC. For franchises that were in the middle of their agreement, this new legislation would not take effect, and basically your franchise would be in effect until the expiration, at which time the cable provider would then go to the state to get a franchise issued to them. Under DIVCA, there are provisions that would continue to allow for the city to receive the franchise fee, the 5% franchise fee, as well as the 1% PEG, or public access and government fee. However, it doesn't continue with having provisions relating to the institutional network and the provision of basic services to public buildings. So currently, staff is assessing to what level the city would like to continue to have those services provided to it, and determining at what level that would be, and getting in communication with Charter in order to negotiate a business service agreement for those services and negotiating the scope of what the cost would be. So at this point in time, that's the only fiscal impact to enacting the ordinance and replacing the two existing ordinances, 5.28 and 5.30. In order to comply with the state franchise, the city does have to make modifications to its ordinance and enact a new ordinance. So attached, you have a proposed ordinance for consideration, review, and adoption. And in order to do that, what you would need to do is hold the public hearing, do the first reading. What I'd like to do at this point is turn it over to the council for any questions or comments that you may have. And staff is recommending that the city council accept public. Unfortunately, the FCC, the federal government, heavily regulates the cable or the video service providers, and under our current provisions as well as under the state, there's very little that can be done to regulate rates. So currently we can't regulate rates and dictate what those rates would be. When the state franchising authority takes place, the same regulations would apply to them, and they would also have not have the ability to regulate rates.
So just for the for our people at home who have had concerns about this, we have no control at all over the rates.
Correct.
Thank you.
Noah, do you have any questions?
Yeah, just to follow up, because I did receive some emails as well regarding concerns about this, and we had some emails back and forth with staff today about alternative options. And if you can follow up for the public, because the question is, well, what other choices do we have by not signing this? What does that leave us? And it appears to me, based on input from staff, that there really aren't any other choices unless we want to battle the state on this.
Correct. This is kind of the effect of dotting the T and crossing the I in order to continue to receive the 5% franchise fee and the 1% PEG fees. Other than that, every other regulatory ability, which was already limited by the federal government to begin with, would go away from the city and go to the state. So if the city didn't want to enact this ordinance and just repeal the two existing ordinances related to cable franchising, we would lose that revenue, which I don't have the numbers off the top of my head, but it's in the neighborhood of $250,000 a year. And right now those funds go into the general fund. There are some of, like the PEG funds, can go towards specific facilities-related equipment projects. The school districts, we've allocated some funding to them for their program, and we've used some for our own local government channel equipment and use for some of the maintenance portion of the contract with AGP Video. That would go away, and that would be a gap in revenue for the city.
Yeah, okay. Well, thank you for making that known to the public. It's frustrating, and it does seem like we're losing some local control, but then we're still retaining some of the compliance and monitoring and enforcement components, and so I'm wondering how that's going to work, and are you the lead staff for that? Is
essentially, yes.
Okay. And as far as the discussion about the cost for service to public buildings, is that discussion, are you planning on bringing that back to us another night, another agenda? We don't need to worry about discussing that tonight?
You don't need to worry about discussing that tonight. I don't know if that's something that needs to come back or would be part of the budget process.
And I guess I didn't follow your question. If you could restate, that would be great.
Yeah, as far as service to public structures that we were receiving, now with this agreement, we won't be receiving those. So it sounds like we'll need to decide whether we want to buy that service or not. And I'm just curious to know when you think that might come back to us.
I think we'll probably look at that during the budget sessions, which are coming right up.
Okay. Thank you. Those are my questions.
Thanks. Thanks, Noah. I think that covered it. Basically, the change in the law is dictating the way we're changing our ordinance.
Correct.
And
it's,
and to maintain our 5% franchise fee and 1% for public, we're bringing this staff report to basically facilitate keeping that part of it.
Correct.
And as far as local control, that was pretty much taken away from us with the state law. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay.
The franchising authority.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Any other questions? Do I have a motion to approve? Oh, public comment. Pardon me. Thanks. Thank you, Nancy. Thanks for that. We're getting ahead of ourselves, or at least I was. So for that, it comes back to public hearing, and we would open this up for public comment. So if any comments on that? Seeing none, we're going to bring it back anyway. And didn't mean to scare anybody away there. So with that, do you have any motion to approve this?
I'll move to approve ordinance number 582, the introduction and first reading, repealing and replacing Morro Bay Municipal Code section 5.28 and 5.30 with new sections 5.30 relating to video service providers.
I'll second.
And if that motion could be...
Business is none. New business, item D1. And we'll turn that over to Rob.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, City Council. I also have a PowerPoint presentation. If AGP could put that on the screen, we can get started with the staff report. Okay. And actually, copies for council. Thank you. This topic tonight is to basically a discussion of our impact fees, where we are, and receive direction from the City Council on where we should go with these. First, before we get started, I want to point out, based on public comment on this item, there may be confusion about who gets charged public impact. Development impact fees. And one of the speakers said that, you know, this might be keeping people from beautifying their property or doing some improvements. It's only that that property that adds square footage to there. So if you're painting, even if you're tearing down a property and building the same square footage, you would not be subject to impact fees because those impact fees were already absorbed with that original construction. So with that, I'll get started on this great presentation that I prepared. Well, that's yet to be seen. A primary purpose of impact fees is to ensure that new development pays the capital costs associated with growth. And the impact fees are to fund these needed public facilities that are to accommodate the new development and to the adopted standard. What that means basically is you can't require new development to pay for the Taj Mahal when existing development didn't. Impact fees are allowed under the California Government Code, Section 66,000, and as follows. Thank you. Based on a report that was prepared in 2070 by the company Muni Financial, and the implementing resolution that provided the necessary findings required by the Act for adopting the fees. Rationale behind impact fees. Starting in 1978 with Proposition 13, funds were cut to fund public infrastructure projects. There's declining support in bond measures, and there's been very steep reductions in federal and state assistance. Many California cities and counties have adopted the policy of growth pays its own way. This funds infrastructure due to new development. If we're to use assessments or special taxes, required that they fund facilities that are directly related to that property. Development fees are for the benefit of development jurisdiction-wide, so the entire city. Development fees only need a majority vote of the governing body for adoption. Impact fees were determined by the City Council back in 2007 to cover several areas of impact. And there's general government facilities such as this building, City Hall, and such, storm drain, our pipes that exist in the ground, the police facilities, the police station, police vehicles, parks facilities, our park lands and those improvements on the park lands, water facilities, the infrastructure both underground and above ground needed to supply us with a safe drinking water supply, fire facilities, fire station, and fire apparatus to keep the city safe during emergencies, and our wastewater facilities. That is what's needed to provide a full, and we assume some modest growth in residential population, the number of dwelling units, employment in the community, and commercial square footage. The other portion of developing an impact fee program is to determine what the needs are for the community. And the needs are both based both on master plans, if there are master plans that exist for various facilities, and they're also based on existing facilities. So the study looked at both these features for the various components, and we needed to ensure that there's a reasonable relationship between new development, the amount of fee, and the facilities funded. This table here goes through the various facilities and calculated what the value of the improvements are, or the need, if it was based on a master plan, for that future development. And it ranges from about $500,000 for our storm drain infrastructure, which is the value of the current pipes that are underground. It was based on existing facilities and the new development buying into those existing facilities, to our transportation network being about $41.1 million for existing street system, and new development would buy their fair share into that $41.1 million roads and signals, street lighting, and $61.4 million for our city's parks. It includes both the land and the improvements upon the land. The two areas where we had existing master plans are in water and wastewater. The master plan, water master plan, included $7.7 million in improvements that are needed to serve future development, and the wastewater master plan had $26 million in projected improvements that would serve that future development. Muni Financial took all these basic parameters and crunched some numbers and came up with a recommendation for the City Council back in 2007. And if we look to the table here regarding residential impact fees, that recommendation is on the far right-hand column. Morro Bay adopted 50% of the recommendation due to never having had robust impact fees and thinking that it was a more palatable way for the community to bring us into the impact fee realm. And the most left column is what, based on current resolutions, what our current impact fees are. And you can see that the total of impact fees for a typical, this would be for a 2,000 square foot residential project, currently would be $9,147.50 for a small scale, less than three lot residential project, and as recommended by Muni Financial, would have been a little over $33,000. On the commercial end of things, the table is set up the same way with Muni Financial's recommendations on the far right and our current impact fees on the left-hand side. As you can see, current impact fees by resolution are waived for all commercial projects, and they would arrange to about $21,030 for a 1,000 square foot commercial addition or new project under the Muni financial recommendations, and they were adopted at $10,515 for that size project by City Council back in 2007. We also surveyed the local communities in our county to get an idea of what their impact fees are. And you can see that in this chart here. They range from, you know, a high of Paso Robles for commercial impact fees, residential impact fees of about a little over $60,000. Atascadero's commercial impact fees are about $59,000. And then to the Grover Beach is, again, just a summary on where we sit on Morro Bay's impact fees. Commercial, there's a complete moratorium on citywide on commercial impact fees until July of 2014. Residential impact fees, not all the fees are eliminated. They're only reduced. The general government parks, wastewater, and water traffic fees are reduced by 50%. Police, fire, and storm drain are at their current levels. The fees only apply to habitable space. Excuse me. And these reductions only apply to single-family projects of up to three units in size, and the residential impact fees are in effect till 2014. In conclusion, we have presented an overview of the impact fees associated in new development, why impact fees exist, and where the city stands on impact fees. We ask that the council weigh the benefits to the development community and weigh that against potential losses in revenue to funding future infrastructure, and provide direction to staff with how you want to proceed. And that concludes my presentation, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thanks, Rob. That was a very thorough and educational presentation. I'll bring it back. Any other questions up here? I'll start over on the left. Ms. Johnson, Christine?
I would like at this point to report some ex parte conversations I've had. So I spent a lot of time researching. And I just want to let people know that I've spoken with, about this particular item, Kathy Novak, business consultant, Bud Sturgill, Morro del Mar project. And I also outreached to all of the council members who were on the council at the time of the establishment of the impact fees. And I did receive responses from 4 out of 5 of them.
Okay, thank you. Any other ex parte? I can attest for having conversation with Kathy Novak and Bud Sturgill as well. Bring it back to.
I spoke with our new economic development director and Susan Stewart. I have a question of Ms. Christine Johnson. How could you get response from 4 former council members when 2 of us are still here? I would think the maximum you could have would be 3.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry for not failing to clarify. I reached out to the council that was seated in 2007 when we established the fees. That's the outreach I did to find out what their process was based for the establishment of the fees to begin with in 2007.
So you did not reach out to the last council that adopted the fee waivers?
That was a bit more in my recent memory, so no.
Okay.
I did not.
Okay, let's direct back to comments and questions. I'll start down at the end with Noah.
Yeah, thank you. I have a question. It's to follow up from a comment during public comment period about the concept of a case-by-case analysis and waiver based on community benefit. That's something I have not heard utilized before. It seemed like it would be challenging, but I felt like it was worth bringing up to see if there was any option there.
I think from a staff standpoint, we would have to do more research on that. I'm a little bit concerned about the due process and subjectivity of it, okay, and that we could get challenged. So I just don't know if other jurisdictions have done that or not.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, I thought that was creative thinking, but it sounded to me like...
And I stepped out for a second. You know, I've seen like what Paso did, though, which is a little different than ours, in that you do have a window where your permits have to be, you know, go to occupancy within a certain period of time so they don't languish on. I've seen those time frames when there's more objective standards, just not subjective.
So at this point, Mr. Livick, if you could talk a little bit about this concept of a completion date requirement that has been mentioned, which is basically trying to make sure that the fees are followed through with, where they're paid in the front end and then refunded?
Yes, City of Paso Robles, as I mentioned in the staff report, they have a fee reduction program, and you have 12 months from the time of notification that you're...
7 in your comparison of the total impact fees. What you're showing there with Paso up in the 50 to 60,000 range, that's before their recent action. Am I correct on that?
Yes. So that would be, I mean, these impact fees are still on the books. They have a resolution like we did, a temporary resolution, which expires June of this year. So any project applied or ready to receive building permit by... June of this year, end of June of this year, would be have that impact fee waiver apply to them, but they would have to complete their project within 12 months. Otherwise, they do not get that impact fee.
Okay, great. Thank you. Those are my questions.
I have a couple. Mr. Smuckler answered or asked my first one, so about Paso Robles. I know there was an article in the paper explaining it. Looking at, we're comparing total impact fees. How does our growth in Morro Bay compare to these other communities that you've listed?
I did not look at the growth rates comparing it to other cities. Typically, we have a small amount of new projects and additional square footage that would add this. You know, some years it's... you know, two or three commercial projects that we would have that would be have impact fees applicable, but I did not look at what the growth rates for the other communities are.
So we don't know how, I mean, we know how our rates compare, but we don't know how our growth compares.
Correct.
I'd like to see the other part of that equation. Also, to follow up on that, you had the 2007 growth assumption. And then when we look at your impact fees collected from 2008 to 2012, starting in 2011, they dropped drastically. And then in 2012, even before we implemented the impact fee waiver, which was not implemented until the end of the year, they are even lower. So that says to me we weren't building.
Yes, impact fees would be directly proportional to the amount of square footage added. That's not to say that we didn't issue any building permits, but we didn't add any square footage. So remodels, single-family additions of less than 500 square feet would not have garnered any impact fees, but we did issue permits for those projects.
Right, for the smaller projects,
yes.
But nothing of any real size. What about commercial growth in that period? Has there been any?
We've received permit applications. think I have that number in my notes. If you give me a second here.
Sure, gladly.
I believe I left those sitting on my desk, my notes for the calculation number of commercial projects. But based on my recollection for 2011, there were four projects that would have been subject to impact fees. And in 2012, there were three projects that were subject to impact fees, two of those being the Smith Held and VLA project down on the Embarcadero.
And then the other two, if my memory serves me correctly, would be Albertsons and McDonald's?
Correct, correct.
Okay. Thank you very much.
They added minor amount of commercial square footage.
Thank you. That's my questions for now.
I have a couple questions. I'll follow up with them. Rob, on the so initially when we started this, the initial recommendation, and I'll go to your presentation because it was right there. The initial recommendation from Muni was the amount of for one-inch water meter, as an example, was $4,700. Regardless, everything at the time of implementation in 2007, it was decided to implement 50% of the recommendation, the recommended fee increases by Municipal Financial. Is that's what you were saying?
That's based on the record. I had barely started with the city at that time, so I don't I don't have the.
I think I've got some input from my fellow colleagues on council that might be able to help me on that. But I guess how did we get to that formula from the past decision? Could you help? Can you respond to that, Ms. Johnson?
Sure. Council at that time was very concerned first about our commercial district and our building and what's going on in town in terms of our economic development, which wasn't happening. The other thing was then the question came up. So these were two separate things. First happened was the commercial, and that was because of the economic development. It was, and I'll explain later, but it was part of a three-part project. Next, one of the council members brought forward reducing the building fees for individual homes, and that was because we did not see at that time, based on information from our planning department, any significant restructure in building happening. So we were hoping that would spur things on, provide jobs, you know, get the building industry moving again. And that hasn't happened very well as far as I know, and later I'd like to address why we think that hasn't happened.
Okay. Any other comments on how we got there? None? Well, then let me ask a few more questions. Did you have anything, George?
No.
Okay. I guess the other couple questions I have, I know you brought up the completion date requirement, and that was discussed. The other question was a deferral program, and that was where you could defer the fees till the project was complete, and then you could actually collect the fees there then as a way to kind of to help a project and not have to incur fees up front. Was there any discussion with that, Mr. Livick, on?
I don't believe there was previous discussion. That was contained in the chamber's correspondent. They gave an example of a community that has a program like that where fees are deferred
Do you have any experience, or have you had any comments or input on something like that, in that kind of program?
No experience, okay. Or no personal knowledge of that type of program.
Okay. And then the other comment in here is a cost allocation plan. And there was something in my notes, at least in the Muni report, that was referring that our cost allocation plan hadn't been updated since 1999. And I take it that cost allocation plan has to do, that was in the municipal financial report from 2007. And I guess that has to do with how we would make adjustments to our fee schedule. Would that be accurate?
I believe so. I don't know. We have adjusted our fee schedule every year since I've been with the city, since 2007. I don't know what happened before then, and I think the city manager is going to speak.
We have updated. I was going to just add the point that we have updated the cost allocation program, and it must have been right around 2007, so it's been done once, 2007, 2008.
Okay. But not since then.
You're correct. Since then.
A couple other things to think about is, and you know, the first initial waiving the fees for incentives to kind of spur growth. The other thing that I think was kind of lacking was some sort of knowledge to deliver that message. So regardless of what happens tonight on where we go with this, if this continues, you know, there should be some sort of outreach, whether it's contacting the people that are the lessees, the property owners, the lending institutions. There needs to be some sort of information out there. If we want something like this to work, then there definitely should be some sort of mechanism to deliver that message so people will actually start taking advantage of it. The other comment that I'll make, because I brought the Muni financial report with me, and there were some numbers, and I'll have Mr. Livick check me on my numbers on this. And since we had our street summit a week ago, you made some reference to the cost of paving our roads, and I calculated that out to be 264,000 miles, or $264,000 per mile. That number is inaccurate on my 264,000. You can check me on that, but that's what I came up with. So I just want to throw that out there, and then I'll come back with some more questions and maybe throw it out for any other comments if anyone would like to speak. Anybody else? Christine?
I just had one additional question of other options. So I have heard, and I don't recall where at this point, are there cities that offer a rebate on fees where you pay up front, and then if you finish on time, you get a rebate? But does that add extra burden on, you know, a project?
That's similar to what Paso's doing. They, if you complete your project within a year, you don't pay the impact fees.
But they don't actually collect them.
You know, their city engineer wasn't sure about the mechanism of how that actually worked. He isn't on the trenches, but maybe Mr. Schultz knows how they actually do that.
Yeah, it's not paid unless you don't finish your project within that year period. So, that's the way theirs is done. I suppose you could do it, structure it your way, where they pay it and then get a rebate if they complete the project. So I think either way could be structured if that's the way the council wanted to go.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? Okay, so where are we going with this? We have a lot of comment on different ideas. We've talked about a completion date for 12 months. I mentioned deferral program. I think we've all discussed, the concern for ensuring that we have some economic growth going on, because it is challenging. But Noah, I know you brought this back. I'd like you to speak a little bit more to what your concerns were and maybe where you'd like to see us go from here, and then I'll add on that as well.
Okay, thank you. Yes, I did bring this back because I do have strong concerns regarding the residential side specifically. I think we've heard comments tonight and from staff and from the public, and as you referred to at the street summit, we all know how much work we have to do with public infrastructure and the needs that we have throughout the list of transportation and traffic, wastewater, storm drain, police, parks, fire, and our water systems. We have big burdens there, and right now we're struggling to just get to the basic minimum of what we need to invest there. And I can see that there is some potential value in removing the impact fees to potentially spur more growth, but I don't see that there's a direct nexus to actually prove that that is part of how you actually get growth to happen. I also happen to be concerned that with out-of-date general plan and local coastal plan, we're somewhat opening the door for any sort of growth, and we're not communicating clearly with an updated plan what sort of growth we'd like to see. What is our vision? So at this point, I feel that it would be worthwhile for us to actually remove the waiver for the residential side, completely return to the 2007 impact fee structure for residential. I think that that is something that will not place an undue burden on single-family residential projects, one, because of the existing structures not needing to pay. If you're within that existing square footage, you don't need to pay the impact fees, and two, if it's under 500 square feet of an addition, you also will not qualify. I'd like to retain that component. I think that's important. I'm concerned about the commercial component, but I see that there is a much stronger argument for the commercial component to continue. So I'd be willing to go there. I think it is important for us to add that completion date requirement that's been suggested, if we will, and, of course, try to communicate it more. And I think the Economic Development Program could be an obvious place to help us with, if we do want to move forward with that, with making sure that the word is out there to potential developers. And I'm hesitant to do that again because I think it's hard to draw a direct correlation to what those benefits are with the impacts to really prove that there's a nexus. And again, because we do have so many needs within our infrastructure. So I'm on the fence with the commercial. I could go there, but I'm very cautious with that.
Nancy, any comments?
Oh, sure, lots. As you probably know, I originally brought the idea of commercial impact fee reduction or waiving to the council last year. It was actually part of a three-pronged plan that we were working on: interest loans, commercial loans to businesses that qualified and wanted to improve their business. Those loans are guaranteed by the city, but remember that they had to qualify at the bank first. So basically what happened and what I would like to see happen is to have this continued at least, I would say, 6 months after talking with Susan Slayton today, because she and I agreed that it will probably be at least that long before we can see any change, perhaps in income tax or sales tax from Albertsons and McDonald's, since they've done their major improvements. So at least 6 months, so that then we can look at the costs, at our income from those. The other thing that I think is terribly, terribly important is that when I proposed this, it was for the core of the city, Morro Bay Boulevard, all of Main Street, and Quintana. Somehow, and Andrea and I talked today and sort of agreed that there was an amendment at some point to the motion that included the whole city. And you'll note that the three, or actually four, because two were Smith-held projects, were not in the downtown core. And that's what this was aimed at. You know, we talk about shopping locally. if we're going to shop local, we have to have things to buy locally. If we expect other people to come into our downtown, it has to look inviting. And that was the real point of this, to see if we could get property owners to improve their properties, to enlarge, to expand, to change, in order to improve that area. I know one project that came up several years ago, even before the impact fees, was the property where Siano Realty is. That property, they wanted to do a two-story with living upstairs. It was a mixed use, and a property, an office downstairs, or retail at that point, I think. It was a retail business, and they were willing to provide a free public restroom for that. Well, it didn't happen for a multitude of reasons, I think one of which was the cost to do it. So we lost our public restroom downtown. In order to make this work, what I would like to see, and I talked to John DiNunzio about that today, was working with, I would work with him and the Economic Development Committee to formulate a letter not only to business owners but to property managers and to property owners, letting them know what the three parts of this economic development plan is, then get those letters sent out, and then follow them up with some phone calls and see if we can encourage any development downtown. I know a letter was written before, and it was a wonderful letter written by my friend, Mr. Livick. Mr. Livick's a marvelous engineer, and the letter sounded like it came from an engineer. I would like a letter that came from a little bit different perspective. So that's my appeal for especially the commercial. I would like to see it extended longer than the next 6 months, but I have the feeling there's no way that's going to happen. In terms of residential, it limits it to just three homes. And we've seen some building going on in the Cloisters, but that's about it. I mean, we don't have, in other parts of town, we have vacant lots, we have small homes that people would like to enlarge more than 500 square feet, and it's not happening. So not only does it give the homeowner an opportunity to have a new or larger home, it provides a lot of jobs for people in our community. We have a lot of contractors and builders who are not working right now or not working very much. Also, we've talked about sales tax before, but this will put more buildings on our property tax rolls, and I think we have to look at that as a source of income. So at the moment, that's what I have to say.
Thank you, Nancy. George?
I always feel like Nancy was reading my notes. By the time she gets done, my wind is gone because she's taking all the right out of the sails. Wonderful. Anyway, I was very disappointed that people didn't go all the way through to the year 2014, what we established. But I at least like to see it, like Nancy said, at least 6 months. Give us a try and see if we can't stimulate some business. But let's get the word out there with people. And if there's anything else we can figure out to really motivate people to build now, you know, that this might not always be here. It sounded pretty good about this thing Pastor Robles is doing is, if you get it done now, we'll do the best we can to make it easy on you. I think that's about it. Nancy covered it pretty well.
Christine?
Thanks, Mayor. I was wanting to follow up with Councilwoman Nancy Johnson. I was taking notes, and on your three-pronged plan, I think I missed some information on number two. I have elimination of parking on North Main, and then that turned out to be not a big issue. And then I have the third prong. The communication maybe was a little bit less than needed. But what was the second?
Actually, the second was this, the impact fee waiver, and the third was the low interest loans from the bank that could be guaranteed by the city, and those
for facade enhancement.
One and three passed. Yeah.
Is that for the facade enhancement?
Facade enhancement,
okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Or for rebuilding your building. Hmm.
So no, we don't. Do we know if anyone took out a loan in that manner?
No one has yet. I talked to Greg at the bank, and I think once again it goes back to what George just said and what Mayor Irons said, letting people know, getting the word out, making sure they're aware that they have this limited amount of time to get out and do something.
And then do we get assurances that Robbo is still interested in working with the city on this? Sounds like it, yes?
Unless something has changed in the last few days. I don't think so. Have you heard anything to that effect, Mr. Liebeck?
No. And it, you still, working with Robbo Bank, you still need to qualify for that mm-hmm. loan. They're, mm-hmm. even though the city is guaranteeing those funds, they're not interested in loaning money that people to people that can't qualify.
Aren't they making it really tough, too, on this qualification, right? If anybody's got just a little bit of a thing, as far as I understood, no loan. And do we just got Robbo Bank to deal with, or maybe another bank? Be just a little more lenient to these people that need to.
You know, George, we had talked at one point about discussing this with Founders Bank, which is a local bank, or what's the other one, Coast something, and that didn't happen, and I think it certainly could, you know, if we continue.
Okay. That's, so back to residential and commercial impact fee waivers. So I hear restore the residential impact fees, but leave the commercial alone is what I hear, and I didn't get much input from you, Christine, on your feeling either way on that.
Right. Well, I've been listening and gathering information, and I was really looking forward to this discussion here tonight because I do think that it is a vital part of our community. Impact fees have been being collected for the last 3 or 4 years, and they do make an impact for us long term and into the future. I do see two windows. I see a commercial window and a residential window. So I don't know if we want to take, I know we've kind of been discussing them together, but I definitely have a stronger sense of what could be possible in with a completion date on the commercial side, because I think that when you overlook what we want to accomplish in Morro Bay, there's certainly, we have some opportunity for commercial development that could enhance our town in a way that perhaps we haven't been aggressive about in the past. So I definitely see a situation where, as Councilwoman Johnson mentioned, her seemed like something changed between her initial concern about bringing up the three-pronged plan and hoping to hit particular areas of town. So if we're going to focus on commercial area, I would like to establish some zones and say, you know, perhaps Old Town and North Morro Bay would be the zone where the impact fees would continue the way they are now with a completion date put in. It seems to me that those, if that's the original intent, which it sounds like it was, and I think that I would, you know, be in agreement with that, we definitely need to focus on our zones and to bring some more opportunity there for people. So I'm very open to talking about what that would look like. And I think 6 months is a short amount of time, quite frankly, and I think that the vision we've got for these empty lots and for remodels, then is there some incentive we can offer people then? But I feel like I would be willing to say, let's go on commercial and keep the rate structure perhaps where it is and do a very concerted effort, maybe even revisit it in 6 months. But I'm less inclined to continue with the current rate structure for residential.
Okay.
Okay.
I have one other question for Mr. Liebeck. On the traffic and transportation fee for residential, you know, I don't know. It was brought up by I think it was Mr. Ewing on public benefit, and when, you know, there's a project being brought forward. So the example would be, you know, if we have a residential project and they have to do curb, sidewalk, and gutter, that might be few and far between in certain areas, and you could probably talk to that. But my thought would be, if there was a residential project that came before, you know, for an application that was in an area which was required curb, sidewalk, and gutter, then perhaps maybe that's the opportune time to consider waiving that traffic and transportation fee, because they're already incurring that expense for public benefit, let's say. But other than that, the residential, I tend to agree that you know, bringing the residential impact fees back to where they were originally from 2007, especially considering, you know, they're 50% less than what was initially recommended, and the city as a whole is on the low side countywide. But if you can just speak to the my comment and concept about sidewalk improvement, if a project came forward like that, and how we could facilitate, you know, waiving a fee for them.
Curb, gutter, and sidewalk is for residential projects. The R1 and R2 is only required if the project is on an arterial or collector street, or on a designated pedestrian way. So there's one designated pedestrian way in the city, which is Greenwood, and there's a few collector streets such as Beachcomber, Main Street, and then our arterials are Morro Bay Boulevard, South Bay Boulevard. So very few residential projects under our current code are responsible for curb, gutter, and sidewalk. But those that would be, we could craft in a resolution language that if the council desires to give credit for those improvements installed with that project, against their transportation impact fees.
Yeah, and I guess the other question would be, especially for those projects that are on the arterial, any of the streets that you're specifying, that are we actually requiring that now, or is there for those projects, is it actually required for those streets to install the curb, sidewalk, and gutter on those?
For example, the residential project that was approved at the corner of Bonita and Main, they have a requirement to install, widen out Main Street to
right.
its full width,
right.
install the curb, gutter, and sidewalk, pave out the street, accommodate so it accommodates the bike lane and parking along there. Also pave out Bonita Street, install curb, gutter, and sidewalk along
right.
there also.
Okay.
Can I ask a question?
Let me just finish
okay.
one more. Thanks. I'll
get,
yeah. Okay. So just to cover the residential portion, you know, I threw out the one concept as far as the traffic transportation fee as a possibility. Overall, I feel as though the residential impact fee, especially for the comments I made, considering we're on the low end, even if it's adjusted back to that 2007 rate, you know, we were recommended to go higher, and it was cut back 50% based on input from public, I guess, what you're talking about. So we're still on the low end. But the commercial impact fees, I'll just cover that a little bit. So I would agree to keep the impact fee structure waived as proposed, with the comments that I've heard as far as let's discuss establishing the zones. The time, I think we should discuss, 6 months is probably short. We should probably be considering another time for that, perhaps a year, and have it come back with data that says, you know, it's either working or it's not. The completion date, that's an interesting one. You know, it seems to be my comments for now, so I'll bring it back to you, Nancy. You had some questions?
I have a question of Mr. Livick, and then maybe I could add to my comments after that. Bonita and Main, I may be losing my mind at this point, but isn't that that large project? I mean, what are 20?
20-something residential units there that was approved, has its discretionary approvals, but has not applied for building permits, yes.
But now, at that size, they would not qualify anyway for the waiver because it's for under three homes,
correct.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure we weren't giving them fee waivers.
Yeah.
First, my choice would be to take these two things separately. I think you know where I stand on commercial fee waivers. My last point that I really want to try to drive home about the residential waivers is that we don't have a lot of building going on right now. We have a little bit, very little. But the property taxes that we will get from that, I think, will certainly outweigh what we charge for impact fees, and the impact fees may, in fact, keep someone from building a new home. So even if you won't continue those, I'd like to see them at least continued for a while until we can find out more about, number one, what our growth is in relation to other cities, how we are growing, based on that chart in here somewhere, and also what we could look at in terms of property taxes from new building. So I would like to see both things continue, but I would like to see us vote separately on them, please.
Noah?
Yeah, I had a couple of points to make. One regarding the Albertsons and McDonald's expansions, those would have gone on regardless of what our impact fee structure was. So I think those are weak examples to use as a point of supporting the impact fee waiver. You can't connect the two. You can't say McDonald's or Albertsons did these projects because of the waiver.
No, I wasn't saying that, but Mr. Leivick sort of said that they did get the waiver.
They did.
And that was not part of what we had expected when we approved this. No, I don't think they're a good example at all.
Okay, good. And I think it also is an assumption to say that the residential waiver with potential increased development will increase our property taxes, which is an important revenue stream for us, our top revenue stream, and therefore displace the loss of the impact fees. And as far as I understand the 2007 analysis, it looked at what sort of funding we need to accomplish our infrastructure needs. And that's an analysis that we can depend on. We're assuming things when we try to argue the opposite of that.
Well, my point was to extend this at least until we can find out or get a better idea of what our property tax income could be from, say, building four or five new homes throughout the city. Maybe not that many, maybe three. What are our possibilities for property tax income?
Yeah.
I'm not assuming it's going to get any better. I'm just asking that we look at it.
Yeah, for me personally, I am definitely opposed to continuing the residential impact fee waiver in any way. I think we need a much better and coherent vision about who we are and how we want to grow before we open the doors in that way, and particularly knowing how much need we have with infrastructure improvements. I just can't personally support anything along those lines until we've done further work there. And I actually am willing to go along with the commercial concepts that you've laid out with the talking about the date requirements. If we need to vet that a little further, that's okay. I definitely like the idea of some promotion work with the economic development program and focusing in on the zones. I would suggest, though, that we do not reduce the water, wastewater, and transportation fees, that we actually increase those to the 2007 levels, just because those are the areas of outstanding need. And the impact fees are based on the concept of they're buying into a system that all of us have already paid for and built up, and they're paying their fair share. So if we were to waive those fees, particularly for those three, I think we're doing a disservice to the community and making it much harder for then everyone else to try to carry that burden, particularly in these very expensive zones of water waste.
Are we going to be a business-friendly council or what? Are we not? And let's tell the people right now that we're going to be.
May I?
I'm going to pass it down to Christine. Go ahead and make a comment and then come back to you, Nancy.
Just a short comment. Maybe it's a question for Mr. Livek. In terms of the building we've seen on the residential side in Morro Bay, let's say since the fees have been begun, are we seeing 2,000 square foot residences, or are we seeing projects that are less than that, a remodel or a 500 square foot addition? Could you just kind of give me a sense of, because I understand what Councilman League is saying, I understand where he's going with that, but I just wanted to get a little bit more background on what is the reality about what kind of homes are being built here.
New home construction, you're seeing it at the corner of 41 and Main. Right now, that's the predominant new home construction, which is not subject to the impact fee waivers. House-by-house construction is typically remodels, tear-down rebuilds. We get an awful lot of those. We don't see a whole lot of new construction. For a tear-down rebuild, you're credited with what the square footage you had before. So if you had a 1,500 square foot home and you're replacing it with a 2,000 square foot home, you only have an increase of 500 square foot of impact, and that's what you're paying impact fees on. We have seen new houses. I don't have the statistics right now. Our the program that we use to track our fees is not the best suited for looking back at statistics. It's more suited for accounting rather than statistics.
Just one really quick follow-up comment is that I believe in utilizing local talent and local businesses as well. I just don't know how we can control that job by job. You know, if you can't really force people to use somebody and then 93442 zip code. I mean, I would prefer it, but it doesn't always happen that way.
Nancy.
I just wanted to agree with George totally that even just one new home being built employs carpenters, plumbers, electricians, glass people. In terms of what Christine just said about local, I know on the city level we can give some kinds of breaks to local businesses who take on a job for the city. So I don't know if that could also be done. I think in answer to Mr. Smuggler's last comment about not having a plan for building, before we eliminate this fee waiver, I would like to see a count of how many lots we actually have available, because I don't think there are very many, and there's just not enough information to go ahead and stop these waivers before we can gather some more information. I think one of the really important things will be the property tax, you know, how many people work on one home, and I think we can talk to some contractors about that. And just how many lots do we have where you can build a 1,000, 1,500 square foot home from the ground up? I don't think there are that many of them. So while I want to see these taken separately, and I certainly agree the commercial impact fees should have at least a year to work it out, I would like to see at least 6 months, if not a year, before we eliminate the residential waivers.
Noah, you had a comment?
Yeah, I just said a response to that, because I think those things you listed are that's information that should have actually been brought forward when we initiated the program, not used to argue to continue a program. We're flying in the dark, is my point. And to Mr. League, we're not saying that you're not allowed to build commercial, that we don't want commercial or residential construction to occur. We're saying we need to collect the impact so that that is paid for and fairly. And of course, that if you build if you build within the existing square footage, you're not going to pay any impact fees. So there's ways around the impact fees for a family that or an individual that would like to avoid them. That option's there. So I think we have something in place that works. And I think if we're going to try to track and gather data about the effects of the impact fee waiver, let's do it through the commercial elements. And that's my choice.
Just a final word. I really feel like we need to do it for both. If, in fact, we're flying in the dark, that doesn't mean to cut off everything.
Because largely that's the largest fee that we would collect for commercial. And I just wanted to talk a little bit more about that because, you know, coming into this and doing the research on the commercial impact fee, I think part of considering the level of inventory and the incentive you would like to make for commercial development, I think that's something that should be reconsidered on those fees. And I would maybe what needs to be clear, if you were to reconsider this as well, is that if it would be one thing if you're waiving the commercial impact fees altogether, and then you have a project that's asking for, you know, all kinds of exceptions and conditions with little public benefit, that I think might be pretty frustrating when you've already waived fees. Maybe that's the way to tie it in there. If you get a good commercial project in there, that's part of the deal on that. If you're waiving, because we want to incent those commercial property developments, then maybe that should be part of the incentive, is to make sure that, you know, those public benefits and those and I'm not saying that no exceptions or variances would be allowed, but that would be heavily weighed in on whether it was realistic or a real consideration. So I'll throw that back at you and then wait for some comments. But I think going back to Ms. Johnson, we need to address these one at a time. So though this is one item for us to decide on, so we would can we take a motion on one of these at a time, even though it's listed as one agenda item?
Sure, absolutely. Okay. You can take separate motions, and then I think your motion would come back in the form of a resolution.
Okay.
Even.
Okay. So, if there's any other comment, the only other comment on the residential impact fee that I wanted to make, and that would be a deferment plan, and I'll throw that back at you, Mr. Leivick. So, you know, the idea of going back to the full impact fee to 2007, and then to, you know, offer some relief for building up front, that we could somehow come up with a deferment plan for these fees. And I'm ready for your comments on that. Throwing it at you.
Of course, we can come up with a deferment plan if the council desires. What I'm hearing is you could pull your building permits, not pay your impact fees until you were desiring that certificate of occupancy, and then you would pay the impact fees. From a staff level, to implement such a thing is very difficult. At the end of the project, typically people run out of money with their projects, and they don't set that cash aside to pay that. And staff will feel an awful lot of pressure for somebody to move into their beautiful new home. Can't you just give us more time, is what we'll hear, to pay those impact fees. So while we can do it, it's going to be a challenge to implement.
So do we have a payment plan on our fees currently?
No. You pay 50% upon building plan check, and the remainder upon permit issuance.
Okay. Then I'll bring it back to Noah on this. I went back to you on the commercial impact fee. And I'd like to hear your response on that. And then let's see if we can get a motion and finalize this.
Yeah, thank you. I'm definitely intrigued by the idea of exploring some options for public benefit and ways to recognize if a structure, a project is going above and beyond your regular standards and reducing their impacts directly, and you can tie them to, say, a much more efficient, water-efficient structure paying less water impact fees. But that's a pretty complicated question, and I think it's a worthy goal, but I felt like, and I was originally thinking we could go into that conversation when I requested this agenda item. I think we need to do more work internally before we try to roll a program like that out. So personally tonight, I think it'd be easier for us to just talk very basically about these fees and perhaps work towards that down the road or in other ways. So that's my response to that. And then I do understand that those are the most expensive impact fees that we have, but just with quick calculations here based on the first chart on page 6, impact fee funds are we passing on that could actually make sure that that new project pays its fair share? These are things that I find very uncomforting to think that we'd say we don't need that money right now. And I'm not sure that would stop a project at this point, because from what I've seen in the case of McDonald's and Albertsons, they're going forward. A big commercial property or project is going to go forward regardless, because it's not the impact fees that's holding them back. There's a lot of other things that go into their final decision. So that's where I'm coming from. I would understand if you didn't agree with me on the water, wastewater, and traffic, or if you wanted to, instead of doing keeping those in full, maybe reducing those as some sort of a compromise, particularly for a short period of 1 year.
Okay, any other comments? Let's start with residential. I think we can get something going here. Just a real quick comment on the deferment plan. It seems like that would be very difficult to manage something like that. Maybe good in theory and in spirit, but I would myself not pursue something like that on residential. But as far as residential as a whole, I would be in favor of going back to the 2000 level impact fees for residential. And I think we've got some consensus on that. I'd like to hear a motion on that.
I would move that we terminate that we rescind the resolution
5212
establishing a reduction for the payment of development impact fees for residential projects and return the fee structure to the 2007 levels.
And we would bring back a resolution to that effect. I think the one thing that staff would like to know is what is the effective date of that rescission?
My intent would be as soon as we've adopted the next resolution.
Do we have a second? I'll second it. Any discussion?
What can we discuss here? I mean, I think what you're going to find out that, your residential homes are going to really come to a screeching halt. Do what you want to do.
I just had a question about if there were homes in the middle of something right now that would be affected by the change.
If they had been applied for under the existing resolution, past practice has been those projects that are in the pipeline would still qualify for that reduction.
And we're still in discussion, correct?
Yeah, so that's a good point. But are you done with discussion?
If you want to
follow up with that. That's fine. And then just one other item I have.
Go ahead.
Okay. I just want to make a just point for discussion that I do think that when you look at their overall infrastructure in Morro Bay, and it's not just Morro Bay, it's basically all over the county and probably all over the U.S., we do have a responsibility to get our infrastructure back up. I think it's a critical need, and we had a lot of people come out last Monday for the street summit, and that's an ongoing discussion that is not going to end soon just because we had one public meeting about it. It's ongoing, and people are still following up. So I think if you just look at streets and you look at what's coming down for us for the wastewater treatment plant project, I think that it's difficult to imagine doing anything but bringing the fees back for residential.
And if I could make a comment regarding the question of current projects that fell under the waiver period, I would assume that you'd have to respect that you couldn't rescind that at this point because that was a decision that was made, and we have to live with that. I think that's the only appropriate way to do it. Would you agree?
Is that in? I guess for clarification, that means any application that's filed by that deadline then would be in the pipeline. Our previous one was just ones that had not been issued the building permit yet. So you're trying to capture any applications that have been in place.
Yeah, so the difference would be they have the permit and have qualified, or they've filed.
They've received that credit. The other typical way that we've done that here is if you have a complete application by the time of the resolution.
And over the last 6 months to a year for sure, we've really been hearing a lot of comments about our streets and all the comments as far as our wastewater treatment plan, as well as everybody else knows. And in addition to my hope would be, considering I've had some projects going on and sought out different contractors and help, I was very pleased to learn that a lot of people are out there working right now, and it was pretty difficult to find contractors out there that could help. So I felt really good that there's a lot more work out there and people are getting to work. So that's comforting to know. And I think, I think this is, just a balance of responsibility. I think the 2007 adopted fee structure, even at 50% of the recommended ones, and I think that's worth repeating. And also to recognize countywide, we're one of the lowest, if not the lowest, in our fee structure. So those are all the closing comments of that. With the motion on the floor, I'm ready for a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed?
No.
The record state that it was passed 3-2. All right, let's go back to the commercial impact fee structure. And
And I need to correct myself. I was, when I did those calculations, I had switched the residential and the commercial. It's embarrassing to admit, but I've got to admit that I had a chance to look at that more closely. And you were right. It is the commercial, the water, wastewater, and traffic is the bulk of, mm-hmm. of the deal. So.
Yeah.
I apologize.
Yeah.
That's what I get for trying to run some calcs while I'm talking.
Well, speaking of which, let's get back to that. Let's see where we're going to go on that. I think we had what we were going to do with that. And let's start with fees first, because I know, Noah, you brought back bringing back water, wastewater, and traffic. And so I know where you stand on that. Nancy, would you comment on just the impact, just the fees alone on that?
Well, I think especially when you look at the size of those three fees compared to the others, it would be ridiculous to reinstate them, and, I mean, there's no point. So I think either we waive all fees, or once again, we don't. I really strongly feel we have to waive all of them.
George, you have any comments?
No, I agree again. I think we should waive all the fees, or keep it the way it is right now. We're talking about a year
I think this thing, if I'm right, this is up in July of 2014. Well, that's just a little over a year, so why don't we just let it run its course, like I said before?
I would agree with that, George. I think it's a very good idea just to go until July.
It's just a few, it's what, a couple, few more months more.
Christine, you have any comments on the commercial impact fees?
Well, I do think that a year is more realistic in terms of seeing if you have it have any real impact, especially if we're going to do a public relations type campaign to get the word out. I don't know. I was wondering if Councilmember Smuckler wanted to revisit his comments a few minutes ago. Would you still be willing to support this if we kept all of the fees waived, or are you looking for a percentage of those fees, perhaps one or two that you think are critical?
Yeah, I'm really having a hard time justifying waiving those three, just because I know the importance for our existing infrastructure and the need. So that's a really tough thing for me to do. I'm definitely interested, though, in this concept, and for what it's worth, how much impact is it really going to have is something that we've talked about. But we would hope if we do this program that it will have impact, it'll be successful. And I guess I find myself terrified that it will be if we waive all of these fees, because I've been backpacking before, and when someone gets hurt, you put the pack that they had on your back as well as the existing pack that you have, and that's a very uncomfortable place to be. And I'm really concerned about putting the community in that position.
Unless we come to a consensus on the fees, where we're at is we're kind of deadlocked on this. Unless I come to a decision on whether or not I support waiving all these fees, and quite frankly, I'm kind of.
So
just to run, because I did some numbers on this. So and I'll defer to Mr. Leivick again, because basically, if we go back to, so if we go back to the 2007 funds for, and we're looking at our fee structure there, it's saying about $10,000 per 1,000 square feet, right? So, Mr. Leivick, so basically if we have a 10,000 square foot structure, we would assume that that's $100,000 in fees. Would you agree? Okay. So, that's pretty significant in both ways. One, because you think, wow, that could be quite a bit of income or revenue, if you would, for our infrastructural needs. And the other is to the developer themselves on developing a property. So by reducing that 50%, there again, it seems kind of arbitrary. You know, my question originally was, you know, how do you come up with 50%? And why not, 29 or 32? And so I think I have a hard time just arbitrarily whether you go to 50% or if you just waive them at all. And with that, I think then it comes back to what Nancy was talking about earlier, and just in getting, hey, well, what are the benefits if you have a project developed and you see the property tax impact on that? So those are some unknowns. But I think going back to this, I would try to establish a zone first before we go on to the impact fees, and I think I would ask Ms. Johnson if she could help us with that, because I think your original intent had specific zones, and if you could help us with that, we could get through this.
The specific zones would be the downtown area, Morro Bay Boulevard, and then Main Street from Pacific all the way up to Yerba Buena. Those two areas, I think, are the ones in greatest need, and I would still like to see the total impact fee waived.
Okay. So downtown would be Morro Bay Boulevard from Pacific Street to Yerba Buena.
So the downtown core, how do you define that? If it's just Morro Bay Boulevard and Main, but let's just take it as the downtown core for now, just for conversation.
Morro Bay Boulevard would, probably from Shasta down to where it ends. I mean, there are some lots there that certainly could be developed and could provide some great income.
You have Morro Bay Boulevard going all the way up to Yerba Buena. Bernardo, actually.
You could.
Yeah.
If you're willing, I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
Because there actually are a couple of vacant lots up there.
Mm-hmm.
I have just a quick question. Do we have anything about the zones that we could use from the sign ordinance work that was done? Did they establish zones?
Yes, they did. There was the downtown zone that we established, the North Main Highway Commercial Zone. So, yes, there were zones established. I was also going to say that there is a established boundary for the Old Town area. I don't have that map with us tonight, but there was a Old Town boundary established. And then we also have the boundary of the Central Business District, which is, yes.
Which is what?
And the parking district.
So we have various districts, I think, that have been established. The one in the sign program hasn't been actually
established.
It's codified.
Draft.
It's draft. I think if that's council's direction is to keep the commercial impact fees waived except establish more exact zones, then we could bring back a resolution with at least staff's recommendation for those two zoned areas, and then you guys could play with it with a map because it's kind of tough to see it unless you have a map in front of you.
That so we can give you general guidelines right now on where those zones would be, which would probably be preferable.
It seems one of the areas you want to exclude is the Embarcadero. I didn't hear that mentioned. Another one, though, that I haven't heard you brought up is that Quintana is a business district, and that's not really considered downtown, or nor would it be considered that Main Street to Yerba Buena. So it may be some direction there if you intended to include Quintana or not.
Is this even legal? I mean, it's so unfair.
Can you explain which part do you think is unfair, if you don't really
explain? What part is unfair?
Right.
Front properties, public land trust properties. So city properties don't pay into the property tax, correct?
They do. They pay a possessory interest. They are valued on their possessory interest, the value.
Are the waterfront?
The improvements.
The waterfronts?
Yes.
Are they assessed at the same rate as just any other?
No. It's a possessory interest. It's based on the improvements to the land and not the actual.
So how does that qualify comparison-wise?
I don't know. That'd be a question for Susan.
Okay.
It might be. I wouldn't. I'd be speaking out of turn if I.
Okay.
I don't know that exactly.
All right. Okay. Well, Mr. League, you brought to our attention the fairness of where we should be going on this commercial thing. But let's keep the conversation going, because either we're going to get through the commercial impact fees for or against, I suppose, at this point, or we're going to actually decide that we're going to establish zones to the unfairness of the waterfront zone, if that's that. But I still want to continue.
I understood. He says he didn't know if it was legal or not.
Yeah.
I'd bring back that analysis. I would imagine what we'd have to do is find specific findings for the areas where we were going to waive those impact fees.
Okay.
And so we could make those findings to allow it. But I'd want to do that legal analysis. And that's why, we'd bring it back for the resolution if that's where the council's going.
So then I guess maybe we should just understand, would we be willing to continue this with that information, or do we just want to get through deciding tonight on whether or not we want to waive the commercial impact fees or go back to the adopted fee schedule of 2007? And that's where we're back to right now.
Well, I would suggest that we, because this information would be important as far as the zones, it seemed like that was something we were all somewhat interested in, aside from Councilmember League. So I think it would be worthwhile to bring this back with that information and more exploration about the timing and of the fees and the payment schedule.
Anyone else?
Well, I just wanted to be clear, especially in light of what Councilman League has brought up, that I think that at least for me and perhaps some others, we were responding to what Councilwoman Nancy Johnson was mentioning in the beginning, that the impetus came from injecting a little bit of action into certain areas that have been a little bit, let's just say, latent. So I think that's where I was coming from personally, was, you know, let's see what we can do to help our old town, which I do think by resolution we have to call it, by the way. I think it's officially old town, downtown, old town. I think I saw that. I think it's old town, but I'll look it up. So I think that, just to be clear, it really evolved from trying to do the best for the overall community and to try to, you know, what is that old phrase? All tides lift all boats, or I don't know. So just, I would be interested in getting a little more information, though, before we go forward on something that might not be legal.
Well, and that's why I figured I wasn't going to bring up the issue until Councilmember League did, in that you then require two council meetings, me to come back with the analysis, and then for you to give further direction, as opposed to you just giving further direction to do the resolution with the areas that you wanted implemented, and then we would bring that back, unless, of course, it can't legally be done, and then I would present it.
Sure.
So it's fine if you want to do it in two meetings, but you'll take two meetings to get there instead of one.
So, question. In the meantime, then, we just continue with our fee waivers, which have not been changed, or
yes,
for commercial. Yeah, you fixed the other one.
So we need to come back with first of all whether or not for commercial, it has to be for the entire city, or if we can segregate it, for lack of a better word. So you'll come back with that. Are there any other items or information that we need to have put out there prior to continuing this item? None? Okay. So I would make a motion that we continue the commercial impact fee resolution pending more information from our city attorney on what the legality of establishing zones for commercial impact fees, or whether or not we would have to waive commercial impact fees in its entirety. Is that clear enough?
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? None? Okay.
It is done this primarily through the marketing and expenditures established in the contract between the city and Barnett Cox and Associates. Although the Morro Bay Tourism Business Improvement District has been very successful, its implementation has placed quite a strain on staff time. Implementing all the contracts, all the payments, the staff meetings has taken up a tremendous amount of staff time. In February of 2012, the City Council, in order to better manage staff resources, directed staff to establish a new nonprofit 501c6 identity to manage the Morro Bay Business Improvement TBID funds. City staff has completed the formation of the new nonprofit entity known as the Morro Bay Tourism Bureau. The board of directors of the nonprofit Morro Bay Tourism Bureau is the same as the Morro Bay Tourism Business Improvement District board. So those two boards are exactly the same. The attached contract would allow the Tourism Bureau to administer the Tourism Business Improvement District. The contract requires the Tourism Bureau to prepare an annual report to the council and the use of all the funds. They must still comply with the open meeting requirements of the Ralph M. Brown Act, and they need to keep all records with the California Public Records Act. By contracting with the Tourism Bureau to implement the assessment funds,
The Tourism Bureau will be able to operate more efficiently than the city in processing payments, as I said, executing contracts, and in responding to the business opportunities on a day-to-day basis. With this arrangement, the Tourism Bureau will be responsible for all the day-to-day operations of the Tourism Business Improvement District, and the Tourism Business Improvement District Advisory Board still will be advising the Council as needed and submitting the annual report in April or May of each year. So this really is a simplification of the process we've been going through now since 2007 with the formation of the Tourism Business Improvement District. Most cities that have formed these business improvement districts over the 10 years have done the exact same thing that we're doing now. They form a non-profit bureau, which is able to use the funds. They're then able to contract directly with Barnett Cox or with any third parties for billboards or websites, or all of those contracts can now be implemented on their own. You will still be in charge of the funds and approve the budget each year for the Tourism Business Improvement District. The contract that's in front of you now is only for a six-month period. I gave it that short period of time so that we can, even after just a short six-month period, look at it again to see if there's any other performance standards or anything else we want to add. And then from that point forward, they would all be just one-year contracts. The reason why it can only be a one-year contract is the actual business improvement district each year will come to you for approval. This will be, for some of you, your first time going through that, but every April we have to bring forth resolutions to reestablish the business improvement district. And if there is over 50% of the hoteliers that object to the business improvement district, then it has to be dissolved. So the contract will only be for 1 year's period, but this first one's for 6 months to make certain that it is reapproved, the business improvement district, and that also allows us time if we do want to make further changes to the contract. So it is a milestone of sorts in that we've completed Council's direction from February 2012, and it really allows for a much more efficient nonprofit to run these funds that are assessed by themselves from the hoteliers. This is no general fund money is in this contract whatsoever. It's all assessments that they do above and beyond the 10% is the TOT. This is the 3% above that's a self assessment on the hoteliers. And with that, I'll turn it back to Council for any questions or comments. And we're looking for approval of the agreement between the Bureau and the City of Morro Bay.
Thank you, Rob. With that, we'll bring it back for discussion. Nancy, would you like to start out, please?
Sure. I'm ready to make a motion to approve the agreement, but I guess I better wait and see if anybody has anything else to say.
Okay. I'll pass it down to Noah.
I don't have any questions, but I did want to recognize the amount of work that's gone into this and how important this move is. We have struggled as the TBID was established and trying to work with staff and carrying all of the meetings forward and staffing the effort. It sure is going to be nice to make this transition and basically let the new Tourism Bureau do the work that we're hoping they can do.
George?
No, I want to move ahead on this too. I am, everybody knows I work very hard on this project, and I think
I don't think it has, any negative effect on it now or in 6 months, other than the fact that, every year we'll have to come back and approve a budget, and I think there are performance standard language that would probably be beneficial to a new contract in 6 months. So I'd like to see that come forward. With that, I'd be ready to take a motion.
Sure. I move we approve the agreement between the City of Morro Bay and the Morro Bay Tourism Bureau for the purpose of providing services for the Morro Bay Tourism Business Improvement District.
Second.
Any discussion?
My only discussion is I agree with you on the performance standard, and I think it's important that over these next 6 months the new director and bureau get a chance to operate knowing that they're establishing what would be the best benchmarks.
Mm-hmm. Great. Anything else?
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? None. Motion carries. Great. Moving on to D3.
Another contract that's somewhat related to the previous contract, and this is approval of agreement between the city and the Morro Bay Tourism Bureau to fund the visitor center. For many years, the visitor center has been run by the chamber, and the city has funded the Chamber of Commerce to run that visitor center. On February 28th, though, of 2012 and April 24th of 2012, the City Council approved the transfer of the visitor center duties and responsibilities from the Chamber of Commerce to the Morro Bay Tourism Bureau as of January 1st, 2013. The contract is almost identical to the one that has been in existence for many years with the Chamber of Commerce. The Tourism Board will be operating the Visitor Center at 255 Morro Bay Boulevard. There is one small change to the contract amount. It states on page one that the maximum amount due for the term period is $58,500. That actually should read $51,245. It's a little bit lower than that amount after we went back and looked in the budget. The actual amount of general funds used for the entire year for the visitor center for this fiscal year was approximately $102,000. So that's the only change to it. We tried to keep it pretty much identical to the chamber. It's a pretty good contract that we've developed over the years that has performance standards in it and does the duties and responsibilities of the party. So with that, I'll turn it back to you for approval of the agreement. Again, this agreement is only for a short term either. Two, also it ends June 30th, 2013, which will give you the ability to evaluate how the Tourism Bureau is running the visitor center as compared to the previous years and make any changes to the contract you find necessary at that time.
Thank you, Rob. I was just doing some calculations there myself. Any questions for staff on this? None to the right. Nancy? To the left? None? So I take it that if the number on page one is for 51,245, then the number below that would be changed as well, and that would be 8,540.83.
Thank you for doing that calculation.
All right, thanks.
Yes.
Okay, if there's no further questions, are there any, can we have a motion with the following corrections on page one?
I move we approve the agreement between the city and the Morro Bay Tourism Bureau to fund the visitor center with the adjustments as suggested from $58,500 to $51,245 throughout the document and report.
Second.
I'll make comments on that as far as questions. I think the other one on there needs to be changed is the $97.50 on page one needs to be changed to $8,540.83 just to coincide with the $51,000.
Okay.
If we can make that adjustment in the motion, then I think we'd be good to go.
I see where you are. I would make that adjustment.
I agree.
Are we good on that? Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
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 All opposed? None. Motion carries. Moving along to D4.
And this is another cleanup on the same issue, which will approve the assignment of the contract with Barnett and Cox and Associates for advertising and marketing services to the Morro Bay Tourism Bureau. The contract is currently between the city and Barnett Cox.
Mr. Staff?
No questions. I do have a comment. Okay, I'm definitely in favor of this. I think the Bureau and Director will have a much better ability to determine just how much of Barnett and Cox's services are necessary and make those adjustments. We know those services are fairly expensive, and that was one of the ideas behind moving in this direction, was to put the controls in the hands of the people that know the performance and the needs. So I think this is going to help maximize our tourism dollars.
Great, thanks. Nancy?
Nothing at this point.
George, okay, great. Thanks for pointing out that, Noah. I think we're having all three of these wrapped up tonight. We'll make things a lot more efficient for us. So with that, do you have a motion for item
Can I ask one question first?
Sure.
When do you know when their contract is up?
Although it has an end date of, I don't think till next year, it's like all of our other consulting clauses, the city can at any time with 30 days notice.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Now I bring back that we can, okay.
Good question. Do I hear a motion?
Yeah, I'd move to approve. Read the whole thing?
Yep.
Okay. Move to approve assignment of contract with Barnett & Cox and Associates for advertising and marketing services to the Morro Bay Tourism Bureau.
A second?
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? None. Motion carries. Great. Okay, on to, is everybody doing okay? Or do you need a 5-minute break? Everybody's okay?
Everybody's okay.
All right. Good.
I'm just wondering when you look, when we look at the hour that it is now, and I'm wondering how lengthy a discussion you expect this to be, if maybe we should postpone it until our next meeting.
No, I think we can get done in plenty of time.
Okay.
Yeah, thanks for asking. Okay, item D5. I'll read this. This was an item I wanted to have brought forward. Obviously, you have the staff report. I'll read it for the audience. The subject is to discuss the January 10th, 2013 California Coastal Commission hearing and decision on the City of Morro Bay and Cayuga Sanitary District wastewater treatment plant application, current wastewater treatment plant needs, regulation requirements, and a future wastewater treatment plant, and provide direction to staff on the above. Recommendation is to that. Discuss the decision of the California Coastal Commission, our current wastewater treatment plant needs and regulation requirements as it relates to the City of Morro Bay and Cayucas, and provide staff direction. The background on this, on January 10th, 2013, the California Coastal Commission ruled to deny A3MRB-11-001, the Morro Bay Cayuga Sanitary District wastewater treatment plant application. The Coastal Commission heard the City of Morro Bay present Resolution 7-13 supporting Coastal Commission staff recommendation to deny our application, and heard public comment from Cayuga Sanitary District to withdraw the application. Further public comment supported the denial, with some public comment to approve the project or withdraw the application. The City of Morro Bay requested to reschedule the regular joint Morro Bay Cayucas CSD meeting from January 10th to January 24th. Cayucas was unable to attend a joint meeting on January 24th. As such, the next scheduled joint meeting will be February 14th, 2013 at the Cayucas Veterans Hall. As for this, discussion is basically that. Just wanted to open it up for discussion on those specific items. And just to be, I think the background that for this, oh, pardon me, was I off the whole time? Okay, good. So this is just an opportunity following the Coastal Commission hearing to discuss this in open session. As I said, we were unable to have our Morro Bay Cayucas joint meeting for the 24th, and in an effort to keep this moving forward, I wanted to bring this forward and discuss issues as it relates to what are our needs for our current wastewater treatment plant, and a timeline and that might be required just to manage the treatment plant that we have. And then the regulation requirements that we need to discuss as far as with the Regional Water Control Board, and then I'll open that up for us.
And what type of permit that we'll be applying for? In regards to the functionality of the existing wastewater treatment plant. It continues to operate. We do perform maintenance on it on a routine basis, but it is getting long in the tooth, so to speak. And we deferred many improvements to the property, knowing that we didn't want to make those expenditures if we were going to be constructing a new treatment plant in short order. So we would like to revisit those, I'm going to call them capital improvements, but Susan would correct me. They're more maintenance, large-scale maintenance projects that will need to be performed. For example, for one of our primary clarifiers, we just had to take it down and replace the bearings on the arm. Things like that will continue. Pumps will need to be replaced. And so what we would like to bring back to the council and to the district is a capital improvement program that outline those costs over some period of time. Let's say, for purposes of discussion, we would line up all the projects over 10 years and revisit that program every year to see, okay, see where we are on the schedule for the new plant, see what projects we could defer, and which ones need to move forward on an annual basis is the tack that we would take with such a capital improvement program. But we need to, before we pursue a program, especially if we're going to use a consultant, we need approval from both the council and the district to hire that consultant. Hopefully that answered your questions.
Okay. Any questions for Mr. Leivick?
Is Cayucas still part financially? They're a financial partner in the maintenance of our current plant for as long as that goes on. Is that
yes.
the case? Okay. So large-scale maintenance projects, you did say that that's a JPA issue. Right?
Yes.
I mean, we need to be discussing that at a JPA meeting rather than here at a council meeting, I think.
Yes. And it was at the last JPA meeting, we did have some discussion on a capital projects program and weren't quite ready to bring that program. And we need further direction from both the council and the board on how to proceed with that. Okay. There are several options, and we'll discuss those at that meeting.
Okay, so that leads me to my last question in that line of questioning. We do not have a project manager anymore, right?
We don't have a contract project manager.
A contract project manager.
We have.
We do. They've all been suspended at this point in time. So.
Okay. But so who would be bringing this report forward to us?
Myself and Mr. Keough would bring that report forward.
Okay. Thank you. That's what I wanted to know.
Do you have any questions, Noah?
No. I'm just wondering, like Nancy said, this is a JPA decision here. Why are we even discussing this here at this council meeting? And we're going to give direction to our staff. I don't quite understand all that. Here we go again. I mean, we're leaving one of our partners out, and we're just going to start making suggestions on what we're going to do with the plan out here without confirming with them. Where are we going with this?
Well,
can you explain it to me?
I think it was, if it wasn't really clear, basically this is all for discussion. What we give direction for staff as far as, I think Mr. Leivick brought forth some information on a capital improvement plan for our current wastewater treatment plant. That's good information. It looks, sounds like they're in open discussion. We're able to have this conversation rather than without the public understanding what's going on. So that gives us some legwork to get done prior to our JPA meeting.
But
so just a minute.
Okay.
Let's keep the one thing at a time. So I think we'll keep the dialogue going. I'll pass it down to Councilwoman, just a minute, okay. Councilwoman Johnson to make some comments, and then we can, you know, follow up on questions. But where we go with direction is, I think that direction comes from this body as a majority.
Down with the JPA, again, there were several dates put out for January. January just isn't going to be possible to meet with our partner in Cayucas, so I do believe we have a responsibility to report back out to Morro Bay at this time, and I think that's where we're going with that.
That brings up two questions from me. Number one, Mr. Mayor, have you actually sat down and talked with Mr. Robert Innes about where we go from here?
Not yet. I think we're discussing those dates and times currently.
My feeling would be that the two of you need to have a discussion, and then we need to go to the JPA before we go around giving any direction to staff. I mean, I think you can talk about what happened at the Coastal Commission. You can rehash, if you choose, the fact that you think that Cayucas did not want to come to a meeting. But I really don't think we can give any direction to staff tonight until we've had a JPA meeting.
Great. We're having great discussion, though, so that's a good thing. You have any other questions? Because I don't have any questions.
I do have some thoughts, though, on some items that I think are important from the city's perspective for us to initiate at least an additional future staff report and evaluation for us to discuss, because it is about things that aren't particularly involved with the JPA. So I'm thankful that this is on there, and I'm looking forward to sitting down with Cayucas. I'm glad it's on Valentine's Day. I think that's going to help with our relationship, and that this is going to be something that we have to stay on top of, because obviously time is of the essence with this project, and I know that there are a lot of people out there in the community that are really interested in hearing from us, okay, what is the plan now? What are the next steps? And it's important for us as the council to keep them up to date on what is happening, what's going on, and I would actually hope that we would have an ongoing agenda item like this perhaps once a month or so, or as necessary here at the council level, just so we're speaking directly to the community, and of obviously valuing Cayucas as a partner and working very hard with them to determine what is the future of our relationship and how is this project going to evolve.
May I ask him a question about what he just said?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, I'm a little confused about what you just said. First, you said there were Morro Bay issues in the wastewater treatment plant, and then you went on to say that we do have a partner. So do we or do we not have a partner? Are we working with Cayucas on a wastewater treatment plant, or are we going to go off and develop our own plan? I mean, are there Morro Bay issues? What are they? If there are separate issues from the JPA, I would like to know what they are.
Well, one of the first ones I think personally that we need to start working on, or at least evaluating, is the update of the general plan and local coastal plan for that industrial area. Let's get a report back on what does that process involve, how much time is involved with that, what would be the costs of getting that rezoning taken care of. This is in response to the Coastal Commission's findings and the idea that we will be moving this plant, obviously. So we need to understand from a city perspective, what does that mean and what's the time involved? And I think that's something that we should initiate on our own, because we're the hosts of the plant. We live with the plant, and that land is obviously owned by Cayucas, so they have a stake in this, but it's in the center of our town and something that we're responsible for as far as the zoning goes.
I think we need to look at our zoning and our LCP, but I think we need to do all of that separately from a discussion of the wastewater treatment plant. That's a separate issue. Where it goes and how it gets there is a JPA issue, if we continue to have a JPA. I mean, we don't even know at this point if Cayucas is going to pull out or if we're going to have a joint powers. But I see what you're saying about updating our LCP. We've been trying to get that done for years. And that definitely needs to be done, but I do not believe that that's part of the wastewater treatment plant issue.
I'm speaking. I agree with you with the LCP and the general plan as a whole, but I'm speaking specifically to the industrial area down there surrounding the wastewater treatment plant, focused on that, particularly because the Coastal Commission has been so clear that they want to help us with that rezoning.
Well, there's a lot more to that zoning than just the wastewater treatment plant. We're talking about a concrete business, I mean, several businesses that are in our only real industrial zone. And I didn't hear the Coastal Commission say that they want to get rid of all of our industrial zone. So I think that wastewater treatment plant being part of that, because obviously it's going to be moved at this point. So that's kind of a moot point that it has anything really, I mean, it'll have to stay there until we get something else. But in the meantime, we do need to look at our LCP. We need to make some serious decisions. And I don't think those decisions should be linked to the wastewater treatment plant. But you and I can agree to disagree.
But in the meantime, we've had great discussion on that LCP and general plan for that particular area. So we're making headway.
But we didn't do it.
And just a second. before we get too much crosstalk back and forth. I know. There he goes. So while you're getting a drink of water there, George, okay. I do want to ask Rob on the Regional Water Quality Control Board. So have we had talks with them yet as far as where we stand?
No, we have a meeting scheduled tentatively for this Friday at 3 p.m.
And so can you discuss kind of the general conversation plans for that?
So we'll say what. Well, they know what happened because one of their staff members was there testifying. And they talked about giving us more time. We want to know exactly what that means, what that more time looks like. Is it I don't think they're going to be open-ended with us. They're going to want to keep our feet to the fire because their feet are held to the fire by other folks. We'll probably want to have a discussion with EPA because they are the ones that actually issue the 301H waiver, because we've heard in the past that they are not interested in issuing another 301H waiver on that site. But that was under different circumstances. So it'll be an open dialogue with the regional board staff, make sure everybody's up to speed with what the city's direction and policy is, and how we can move forward on ensuring that we are maintaining compliance with our existing site and moving as quickly as possible on permitting a new site.
Great. Yeah, go ahead. Hold on. George, thank you. Sorry,
I was just thinking here that I think the thing we should probably be discussing right now is exactly where are we going to go with this old plant. We need to get to be agreement with among ourselves once we start to meet with the JPA, and so we have a direction what we're going to go. Because right now, and you know it, and there's no use kidding, we're 10 years at least with the old plant, maybe longer, probably longer. So we got to get, what are we going to do now?
What are you basing that 10 years off of, George?
Well, I've talked to several people that's
and the engineers and all the people that have been working on this long time. Now, how long have we been working on it before? Was it how many years ago did we start this? 12 years? Okay, and we're right back to where we started, right? So what makes you think that we don't have another 12 years ahead of us? You know, do you think that this plant is going to just appear someplace else overnight? It's not. It just isn't. Ask our next-door neighbors over there, Los Osos. It just doesn't happen. I mean, you might think, okay, we're going to put it up, let's say the Ruggedi property. Oh, then we end up with a bunch of litigation. The people up there don't want it. Okay, then we decide to go over here. There's going to be a lot of litigation in this, and we better figure out what we're going to do with this whole plant. And we need to bring something to Cayucas with an idea of what we think we should do, and then get them to go along get their position on it. This idea I hear about people talking about, like a new wastewater plant, it's only going to cost like $9 a month. Whoever comes up with that, with kind of figures like that. I talked to the engineers on this, and they're talking about a lot more money, up to $200 a month. So, you know, here we are. There's going to be so much discussion and like I said, litigation and things going on. We better start worrying about that plant right over there, because it's not going to keep working by itself.
It's, again, another great reason why we should keep on communicating the issues and working to develop real information, because I get concerned when you say the words $200 a month, because we have not seen anything that shows us that that's the estimate. And we all know Los Osos is starting a project from complete scratch. They have septic systems over there. We have a collection system that's existing. We have an existing wastewater treatment plant. We're talking about building a new wastewater treatment plant, which is not what Los Osos is doing. So I think we need to be careful about continuing to say we're going to turn out like Los Osos. This is a very different situation. It's a challenging one, and we have to have full focus on it. But I think that's more reason to develop the capital improvement schedule and to take a look at the information. So I do agree with you on that. I think that's very important. And I'd like to see this process laid out in a time frame eventually, so that we can present it to the public and they can understand it, because it's frustrating right now how much information is flying around. I think part of our responsibility needs to be that we get as much information as possible about the different options, and we present it to the public so that they can make an informed decision and help us make the final decision. And I think that's part of the thing that we're trying to discuss tonight.
Can I respond with the two things you said? I think, number one, we have to look at the time it's going to take just to find a new location. If you will remember, when we ended up with the same location again, we had at least two public forums where people came in and made recommendations. We started out with 17. It took time to get those screened down to 3. That's going to take quite a bit of time to start all over again with that part. George is right. And you said that we already have a collection system. If we move this wastewater plant out of there, we're going to have to look at a whole new collection system. You can't just turn those pipes around and pump it somewhere else. There are going to have to be new pipes. There's going to have to be a lot of work done with the new collection system. And it's going to take a lot of time. I think we just have to understand that to begin with. I think 10 years is probably a very generous suggestion at how long it'll take. In the meantime, we've got to meet with Cayucas at the JPA and decide how we're going to keep our current plant going and what it's going to cost.
I have a couple remarks as well. First off, Nancy, you're correct. We do need to meet with Cayucas, and Cayucas is a partner, and this meeting in no way is to divide us as partners. It's just a matter for us to meet. I mean, look at all what we have been able to discuss, and we would not be able to do that without being in open session right now. Take it as it is, but I mean, this is a first step for us to have that open discussion, which is very, very important for us moving forward. Yes, there's a lot of things that we have to work out, whether or not we have workshops to get people together to do that, whether or not we have our general plan and LCP amendment that is to be worked on. We can name all those things, but by continuing to have this discussion right now, we're able to do that in open discussion, inform our community, and offer the opportunity to make public comment on a regular basis. And I think when it comes down to, I'll comment on Noah's remarks about, moving forward, what's the cost going to be, and how long is it going to be? Certainly, we've been dealing with those questions for a long time. But the bottom line is, we've had a decision on our application, and we need to move forward. So whether it's once a month for us to continue to have these meetings, which, as I said, we're able to do this in open discussion. That's the only time we can all have input on this without, and that's not a bad thing. The Brown Act will only allow one or two of us if we wanted to work together and comment on that. But for the sake of the public and to moving this forward, coming here tonight and discussing this in open session, I believe is a benefit. I think we've all brought some things to the table, and as far as providing direction to staff, I think there's that's an open-ended statement, and granted, decisions will have to be made at a
project somewhere else, and Cayucas just staying right there where they are. Then we could have dueling ones. That'd be good.
Christine?
I just wanted to make a few, if this is an okay time to make two comments. I think that cost and timeline are on the mind of every single resident in Morro Bay and Cayucas. And I think no matter where people fell on their opinion on location of the wastewater treatment plant, cost and timeline are the two things that we know every single person wants to know about. So I think if we all, I would bet we could even vote 5-0 on that cost and timeline are the two most important things to communicate to the public in Morro Bay or in Cayucas. So the more discussion we can have about that, the more time we can allow people to come to public comment when something's on the agenda and speak to it, I think that the better off everyone will be about information. Second thing I really want to clarify is if you're talking about dollars in San Luis Obispo County, I think that I just want to point out, we do mention Los Osos a lot. It probably is a disservice to that community to keep bringing things up about their project because they went through a lot there as well. But I want to just point out that a fact that I learned, and you can go on the website for the Big Dig or whatever they're calling it, through the county of SLO, and you find out that in SLO dollars, the Los Osos wastewater treatment plant, and we're just talking about the plant itself, not talking about collection system, I'm not talking about piping, is $34 million. So right there we look at a plant that is being built from scratch in Los Osos, and it has, I don't believe it has any ocean outfall. And it is $34 million. So I just want to keep pointing that out, that we do know what the most up-to-date wastewater treatment plant is costing in our county. It's not to say that that's going to be where we could be, but certainly that is a fact that's there, that's verifiable. So I just want to point that out. And I just want to remember that the reality is we need to move forward, and we will do so with Cayucas as soon as we possibly can. But I appreciate the conversation. I think the public appreciates the conversation.
Thank you.
May I say this one more time?
Yes.
Based on what Christine just said. You said time and cost. We all agree that that's the most important thing. We have no idea what the cost is going to be until we find out whether or not Cayucas is going to continue to be a partner. That's like 40% of our cost. It's going to change. And that's, once again, I will say, we need to have this open, televised public hearing discussion with the JPA.
No.
And actually, that speaks to one of the items that I think we need to have on the next agenda with the JPA, which is a preliminary discussion about the potential scenarios. I had requested that approximately 6 months ago and did not receive support. But we have heard the discussions about, and it's mostly rumors. We've never taken it head on. But let's make sure that when we do sit down with Cayucas, that we're able to put these different scenarios up on the board that we've talked about, or maybe that we haven't even thought about, and that there's an item that allows that discussion. Because maybe we look at this and we realize Cayucas has a great option, and it would be... It would be something that they would not be doing a good service to their community if they didn't explore it. But we need to address that as soon as possible, because until we move through all these different options and start to hone down on the best choice, we're going to be sitting here treading water. And I'm interested in moving forward and defining what the best project is. And I think we have some good foundational information to work from, particularly when you look at the alternative sites, and the analysis that we did on the alternative sites really did a fair job of whittling down to some key options that appear viable. And that includes the Rigetti property, the Toro Creek property, and, of course, the Chevron property that was, or the Choro property that was evaluated years back. And perhaps we open it up to the opportunity to identify another site that is worthwhile, but realistically, we have stepped a fair way into that potential options for alternative sites, and that's a good thing. That puts us ahead of where we are. We're not going back to square one. We have something to work and build off of.
I have a question for our city attorney, Rob. The preliminary discussion about possible scenarios. So some of the questions we have tonight, and we have a February 14th Valentine's Day meeting with Cayucas. Thank you, Noah. And so to
get chances of sure, are that okay. They're not going to go on there. But I mean, we work hand in hand with Cayucas, okay, just as we look at it and see what we can do for those agenda items. Do they properly? You know, again, I go back to the Brown Act. Does that agenda item properly provide enough information for the public to know what that item is and what you're going to be looking at for voting purposes? So, okay. But we can go through those items and start preparing them. Our meeting with Robert ends. We'll start to formulate some of those things this week.
Okay.
That was exactly my comment. I think before you start developing an agenda for a joint meeting, you need to sit down with Robert Enns so that the two of you can come up with the agenda together, because it is a joint meeting.
Thank you.
Haven't we discussed this enough tonight?
We could go on
forever here, you know. I mean...
Yeah, it's you know, thanks for all everybody's input.
What direction do you want to go from here?
I think right now we were able to get a lot on the table. And
I agree.
I think with that, unless there's other this is not a public hearing item. We had public comment at the very beginning of the meeting.
This is an agenda item where you're gonna potentially give direction to staff.
I think not. At this point we're you know, interaction from the public is, you know, for our meeting, pardon me, public comment was at the very beginning. I apologize for that. So,
I know, and now I'm going to contact California Works, because I've already been in contact.
And
refusing public comment.
Okay. So just for the public, the viewing public, just so there's some comment about having public comment for this particular item. And per our noticed agenda, public comment was taken at the very beginning. But to your, but I will respond to the gentleman in the audience that actually I will revisit on how our agendas are conducted on, and whether or not we take public comment for each particular item. So that'll be addressed as well for the future. So bringing it back to council, I think. Unless there's any other closing remarks, I think we've done a great job. I'm glad that we brought this to the table and had open discussion on this. I think Nancy, you gave me some pretty clear marching orders on meeting with Mr. Enns, and I am so pleased to do that. And I think Mr. Schultz has scheduled that for us as well. So we're looking forward to that. We understand that Mr. Livick and staff are going to be meeting with the Regional Water Quality Control Board. We understand what's going on there. And agenda items for this upcoming Cayucas joint meeting, as far as discussing about possible scenarios, that's something I can bring forward with Mr. Schultz as far as getting on the agenda. And I think we're pretty good. We have one more comment. Okay, one more comment. Go ahead.
I just wanted to follow up to as far as the discussion about the LCP general plan update. Is that something, should I just bring that forward at future agenda items?
I can take that and then discuss with Mr. Schultz on bringing that forward as an agenda item.
Okay.
Christine?
I just wanted to add to the discussion this evening that I looked back in the history of large projects in our city, and I don't know how this will shake out depending upon where we move forward and how we move forward in Cayucas, but I see that the New Futures Group and the 2020 Vision Report were large projects looking forward into the future, and they both had a cross-section of residents who were involved in the process, and I don't know how that will work out, but I would like to revisit that at another time, how we would create a ad hoc or a blue ribbon committee to help us move this project along.
Bravo. And without any further ado, this item is closed, and that brings us back to any closing remarks, which I think we've done, if everybody's in agreement. And with that, the meeting will be, I beg your pardon, future agenda items. Do we have any future agenda items? Yeah. The future agenda item for future agenda items, is that what you meant on that? Oh, okay. So you want the LCP? Well, that was your future agenda item. Let's put it down. So LCP and
the general plan update, specific to the area of surrounding the waste.
So that would be an amendment.
Yes, it'd be an amendment, looking at the industrial zone and considering a schedule and timeline as well as cost estimate.
And what it would take to make a LCP and general plan amendment for that area?
Yeah.
Okay.
Recognizing likely open space.
And now, the other question is, if we take our only real industrial area out of off of Atascadero Road and out of there, where do we put it? What do we do for an industrial zone?
The only real industrial production there that's happening outside of the plant is the cement plant.
Well, yeah, right. But there are a couple other things going on, like the city yard and some other things that are
totally
industrial.
Under our control. That's not true industrial as far as
plus
production.
Plus, we still have the power plant down there, which is industrial.
It is, but we are all talking about different zones here. So, and this is why I want to talk about bringing an agenda item back that evaluates different options. I could see a scenario where some sections aren't allowed to be visitor zones, commercial, and they end up being recreation open space. But then others are. I slipped it in after our retrospect. If we had a little more practice, we would have pumped these guys in front of the whole T-Ditch stuff in front. Yeah.